Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
And welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Mark Steer, going to be here talking about the debt ceiling, and maybe we can put some dirt on this eventually, get it off of the front pages, get it out of our mind, because at the end of this, Democrats, you basically gave in. Gave away the baby, the bathwater, and probably the bucket that went with it. And the more I think we find out about this, I think the less I'm going to like about it. So we'll talk about that with Mark Steer. Also at 10 o'clock, we're going to be talking with Mike Ludwig on fracking. And, you know, I've been saying for a long time with all of this deep well injection that we're doing with, you know, God knows what that we're pumping underground. Does this cause some problems? Well, Mike's saying in Arkansas, maybe causing some low-level earthquakes. So something for us here in Pennsylvania to take notice of as we start pumping this stuff deep underground, start talking about. Also in the second hour, Daniel Denver, reporter, he's going to talk about his piece on Representative Daryl Metcalf. And, you know, I guess the line, he was a Tea Partier before Tea Party was cool. Denver's piece, Right Makes Might. Over at the City Paper in Philadelphia, going to talk about the mad cow himself and the rise to power there, and kind of maybe a little bit about what we're to expect here in the next couple of months, because his policies, while radical a couple of years ago, are now the mainstream of the Republican Party. And while a few years ago we saw Metcalf for what he was, an extremist out on the fringe, sadly, the party has moved to the fringe. And now fringe is the new normal. So it'll be interesting talking to him. And also in the third hour, we're going to talk to Wisconsin Representative Brett Halsey about the right-wing attacks on Wisconsin voters. And I got to be honest, they're doing stuff that, you know, you go, wow, really? You're going to try and get away with that? Like burning down the PAC headquarters of one of the progressive groups trying to do away with a couple of Republicans in the recalls? Really? You're going to burn that down? Yeah, I guess. And we called it. There would be groups sending out fake information, and the Koch brother front group, Americans for Prosperity, have not disappointed. We'll talk about that with Representative Halsey as well. So I'm sure you have heard. I'm sure everyone has heard the debt ceiling has passed the House. 269 to 161, 61, 66 Republicans against. 95 Democrats voting no. So you look at this and you go, big pass. It's going to go through the Senate. It'll sail through the Senate. Who won? Who lost? I'm saying the Republicans won big. I think they got everything that they wanted and then some. Even the negatives will be positives for them as they move forward. Because as I get this, and you know, if you've got other information, these triggers that they keep talking about across the board, 2% cuts to every program, and I'm going, really? That's the best you could get, considering that's kind of what the Republicans wanted to do anyway. But that is the punishment, if you will, for not coming to an agreement. So as we move forward, the commission gets together and does its work. At the end of it, there's no stick on the Republican side. It's all carrot, in my view. And I like what Emanuel Cleaver said, the Democrat from Missouri, who told Roll Call yesterday that the deal was a sugar-coated Satan sandwich. And again, when he was on MSNBC with Chris Jansen, she asked him, you know, was that your quote? And he said, yeah, that's very accurate, he said. What you see is antithetical to the everything that religion of the world teaches. He says, taking care of the poor, taking care of the aged. Look at the phone calls I've gotten, he said. There are 7 to 1 in favor of a balanced deal, preserving Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid. And he said, I'm not concerned about this because we don't know the details. And until we know see the details, we're going to be extremely non-committed. And Nancy Pelosi chimed in saying, yes, indeed. It was a Satan sandwich with a side of Satan fries. And, you know, again, you know, like she said about the health care bill, you know, the more you find out what's in it, the more you're going to like it. I think this is the other side of this. I think the more we find out what's in it, the more we're really not going to like it. So as the details come out, it'll be interesting to see where this takes us, what kind of cuts are coming, because I'm sorry, I just don't get that you can do all of this on the cut side. There's only so much to the bone you can take before you really start harming people. So, you know, we're going to see where this takes us. And if you look this afternoon, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on fake news at Fox with the guy Neil Cavuto, and he confirmed pretty much what we already knew. Welcome to This Is the New Normal. Welcome. You know, just like, you know, hijackers on airplanes are never going to find passive air passengers, the debt limit's never going to be raised without this kind of a hostage situation. McConnell said, quote, it set the template for the future. In the future, Neil, he said, no president in the near future, maybe in the distant future, is going to be able to get debt ceiling increased without a reignition of the same discussion. So there you go. Good stuff. He claims that the debt ceiling will be raised again in 2013, so he's looking forward to doing it all over again. And what gets me is I look at this Huffington Post article, and this woman is now saying that in the meeting today with the Democratic caucus, Biden told them that Obama was ready to use the 14th Amendment. And, you know, I just kind of, now look, it's hearsay, just coming from this Huffington Post article. I can't find anyone who's going to back this up just yet. We're still looking. But if that's the case, and he was willing to, at the end of the road, at the 11th hour, say, you know what, we've got to invoke the 14th Amendment, don't you think that would have been a good position last week when you had a negotiating position? I don't know. I mean, you know, if you've got a position of power at the line, don't you kind of use that ace sometimes, maybe once? I don't know. But especially when you're looking at the Republicans who really, in this hostage situation, were really willing to kill the hostage. Trust me, they were willing to kill the hostage. They were willing to take this country down. There was no question in my mind that the scorched earthers were fully prepared to go the distance. No question in my mind. Even though the business community was saying, do something, even though the financial industry was saying, do something, you look at the fact that this guy who's the head of PIMCO, this Muhammad El Rayan, who's saying, look, it's short-term relief. You haven't fixed any of the problems. Possibly, we could lose the AAA rating anyway because you didn't do anything to fix the structural problem. Sure, you did some cuts, but what you're doing is you're actually taking money out of the economy at the worst possible time. He says the potential budget agreement does nothing to restore household and corporate confidence, so unemployment will be higher than it would have been otherwise. Growth will be lower than it would have been otherwise, and inequality will be worse than it will be otherwise. So, again, this is a guy who deals in moving money around from country to country. And if you remember about 3 months ago, we talked about this group pulled all of its money out of our currency. dumped all of our treasury bonds, dumped everything, got out. Because I think they knew this crisis was coming. But the reality is, as he says, the rest of the world's watching. And this will do very little to reduce the concern that the rest of the world has about the role of the U.S. And you look at what Vladimir Putin said, the Prime Minister of Russia, who said, quote, about us, the country is living in debt. It's not living within its means, shifting the weight of responsibility on other countries and, in a way, acting as a parasite. So we've got the Russian Prime Minister calling the U.S. a parasite. We've got this guy who's the head of a huge financial firm saying, well, you know, you're going to pull money out of the economy. You're going to create more job loss. You're going to create more uncertainty. All kind of bad stuff. It's going to get you past your debt ceiling, but it's not going to do anything to help our weak economy. It's not going to do anything to help strengthen the country. Now, I was watching the Senate go back and forth over the weekend. I was glued to the C-SPAN for a day. And one of the things that jumped out at me, aside from the dog and pony show that Rand Paul and Mike Lee had, comical geniuses right there. They really should go quit their day job and do the dog and pony show on the road. But one of the things that grabbed my eye is one of the senators said there has not been any increase in domestic spending. It has been flat for the last 10 years. We've had no increases other than just basic inflationary increases. So when they talk about we want to go back to spending levels 10 years ago, sorry, we're already there. We've been there for 10 years. We haven't moved. So I find it quite interesting that while we're arguing over how much discretionary spending we're gonna cut, we haven't added any. So as you move down this road, and look, there's gonna be pain felt here, massive pain, I think, for some. Not the very wealthy, they did all right. They got what they paid for. They paid for protection. Basically, what the Republicans are is a protection racket. They're paid off by the big corporations, by the very wealthy, to protect them from us. And hey, you know, they've done an outstanding job. What they haven't done, what this protection racket has not done, is it has not focused on the problems that we have. And we've got some serious problems. 15 million people unemployed, 9.2% unemployment rate, an economy that looks like it's going the other direction. We've spent the vast majority of our time arguing about debt when employment is something we should have been talking about. In fact, the folks over at Think Progress, you know, did a little search for phrases on the MSNBC, Fox, and CNN. And what they found, and it's amazing. The last week, the word debt turned up almost 7,600 times on those three networks. The word unemployment, 427, and the word unemployed, just 75. So where was our mind? Our mind was on the debt, away from what we needed to be talking about, which is jobs, which is the way we fix our debt problem. We should be talking about trade policy that turns this all around, but no, obviously we can't do that. And what's sad in all of this story is we fell for it. We have completely bought into this debt first, foremost, and last, and all of the other things that are important set to the side. Maybe now, I mean, although they all went home, maybe now we'll start talking about jobs. I doubt it. There was a vacation starting here in a couple of minutes. So the Republicans and the Democrats are going home without doing their job again. And the folks that they kicked out into the curb, who work for the FAA and who work on all those jobs that the FAA reauthorization bill would have continued to funded, all those people are unemployed. While our representatives, they go on vacation. It's maddening, is it not? Anyway, we're going to take your calls right back after this with Mark Steer, former director of Penn Action, right back after this.
Oh,
all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
The Pew Research Center released a study last week that shows a staggering racial wealth gap. According to the study, in 2009, the median wealth of white households was 20 times that of black households and 18 times that of Hispanic households. According to Pew, the lopsided ratios are the largest since the government first began releasing such data. It shows that the recession and housing bubble hit minorities much harder than white households. Hispanics saw their median wealth fall by 66% since 2006, and black households saw a decrease of 53%. In comparison, the decline of median wealth for white households was barely a blip, declining 16%. The typical white household held $113,000 in assets in 2009, while Hispanic and black households both held less than $7,000 in assets. The average net worth of Hispanic households was $18,000 in 2005. The union has filed charges against Hyatt for turning heat lamps on picketers as Unite Here's Chicago Hyatt hotel strike continues. Doug Cunningham takes a look at the issues behind this strike.
If you're in solidarity with workers and you're traveling to Chicago, striking Hyatt workers ask that you don't stay at Hyatt hotels in the Windy City.
Support the boycott, not to come inside these hotels if they're not going to treat the workers what they're just due. Our workers are standing up for what's right.
Will Spain is door captain at one of the Chicago Hyatts. Spain says the main issue is job security.
The Hyatt has added temp workers to work alongside our folks to try to take away their jobs. We need the support from the community. We need support from the religious leaders.
Before striking, the workers bargained with Hyatt for 20 months. Unite Here says Hyatt is owned by billionaires, yet wants to outsource work and impose dangerous conditions on housekeepers. The American Journal of Industrial Medicine found in 2010 that Hyatt housekeepers had the highest injury rates of the five major hotel companies.
They do a 16-room quota a day, and they're beaten down. They can't go home and feed their families at the end of the day.
The emergency financial manager for Detroit Public Schools will unilaterally slash worker pay by 10%. Roy Roberts made the announcement on Friday, adding that employees will also be responsible for a 20% increase in health care costs. Roberts can make such decisions due to new powers emergency financial managers received under legislation passed in Michigan earlier this year. The pay cut starts on August 23rd, and the benefits hike starts on September 1st. Unions representing teachers and faculty are planning to challenge the decision in court.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Seems to be the clarion call there. That seems to be what happened this past weekend. The Democrats, again, in my opinion, did capitulate, as Dick Cheney said they do. They cave. That's what they do. Real quick, the Borowitz Report, in a historic 11th hour bipartisan accord, the United States debt ceiling was raised Sunday night before the Tea Party understood what it was. In an effort to gain as many Tea Party votes as possible, the debt ceiling bill was drafted entirely in one-syllable words, according to congressional aides. But even as the final agreement was being put to bed, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell urged his Republican colleagues not to rest on their laurels. He said, "Now, let us begin the hard work of creating the next crisis." According to those close to the negotiations, the GOP in Congress were under pressure to get a deal done before the observance of the official Republican holiday, Shark Week. Additionally, the Chinese government had warned that if the U.S. defaulted on its treasuries, China was prepared to take full ownership of Washington and rename it Wang Chung. In the end, though, Senator McConnell said the Republicans stood to benefit the most from striking a deal that warded off financial calamity, saying, "We deserve full credit for finding the antidote, even though we were the ones who administered the poison." And that's pretty much straight on. Anyway, here to talk to us about this and All else Obama is our good friend Mark Steer, former director of Penn Action. Mark, thanks for taking time for us.
Always happy to be on the show and talk with you, Rick.
Well, you know, what do you think of this? Was this the best he could do, or was this just our guy doing a crummy job?
It's a debacle. And before I get into the details, let me just say one thing. I was a supporter of Obama. I worked my ass off for his health care legislation, which I continue to think was a major achievement, although one that needs improvement, and I'm going to vote for him. But this deal is just a debacle for progressives and for labor.
I agree. And what we're seeing is, and what I'm the response I'm getting from folks is, we really shouldn't call this what it is, because, as you pointed out, the president has had some things that we're kind of happy with, so we shouldn't attack him for this, is the kind of sentiment that I'm getting. And I'm uncomfortable with that.
No, I think we need to call it as we see it. I've been saying for a while, we need an intervention. We need some wise people to go to Obama and sit him down and say, look, you're heading in the wrong direction. It's going to cost you the election, and it's going to cost the progressive movement a great opportunity that we've kind of let slide. The first thing to say about this is everyone's talking about it as a tactical error. He could have made a better deal, and that's probably true. But you know what? It was a strategic error first and foremost. We should not have been having a conversation about the deficit now. No Democratic president should be talking about anything but jobs when unemployment is 9%.
Absolutely.
The fact is, that's what people care about. Obama could have stopped the whole conversation in its tracks by insisting on raising the debt limit back in December when he made the deal with the Republicans to extend the Bush tax cuts. Failing that, he should have just announced 3 months ago he would sign a clean bill raising the debt limit, and if Congress didn't give him one, he would use his authority as president to keep writing checks without raising the debt limit. There are at least three different ways he could have done that, and then we wouldn't have been having this discussion at all. And then he should have sent jobs bills to Congress and challenged the Republicans to pass them.
Yeah, I often say that the Democrats aren't good at playing the political game. And this is what this whole debt ceiling talk was about. This was politics in action. This wasn't governing. This was politics. And in the politics game, Democrats generally lose.
It was a totally phony crisis that the Republicans deliberately created and that Obama let them create. He should have just taken this off the table, and he could have done it 3 months ago.
And then we find out today through Huffington Post that, and this is according to Huffington Post, that Biden told the Democrats today that that Obama was willing to use the 14th Amendment if he had to. That would have been nice, I think, to negotiate maybe a week ago with.
I would say 3 months ago. I would say either you do it cleanly or I'm going to do it. But at any rate, you're not going to hold the country hostage. You're not going to hold me hostage. We're going to raise the debt limit one way or the other. In the meantime, let's talk about what we're going to do to lower the unemployment rate.
Absolutely. What do you say to McConnell saying, welcome to the new normal? This is how it's going to look every time the debt ceiling has to be increased.
Well, you know what? Basically what he's saying, he doesn't want the government to work. And, you know, that's easy for Republicans to say because, you know, they want the government to work for rich people, but if it's a choice between working for poor people and working people and not working at all, they'll take not working at all.
Well, I've taken the position that what just happened, what we saw, was your basic protection racket, was your basic, you know, street thug protecting, protecting the people against themselves, against them.
Look, we have a government of checks and balances, and anyone who studied our history knows it only works if all sides are willing to give a little to be respectful of the constitutional prerogative of the other side. If this is how the Republicans are going to try to govern, then the Democrats have to rise to the occasion, and we have to play hardball as well. We've got to use the powers that the branches we control have to fight back against the Republicans. And, you know, all this talk about winning over the independent voter, the independent voters don't care about the deficit. The true independents aren't that knowledgeable about politics. They don't vote that often. And you know what they care about is president being strong and feeling that they're protected by a strong president.
Yep.
President Obama has shown that he's a weakling. I mean, you know, to use an old Yiddish phrase, he's been a bit of a putz about this. And, you know, with all due respect, that's not how he's going to get elected. It's not how he's going to be able to govern.
Well, I've often said that, you know, when you look at people like me, you know, white middle class, blue collar workers, they're attracted to the ideal of strength. The reason white middle class, blue collar workers took to George W. Bush is he was decisive. We may have been going down the wrong path, but at least we were doing it with decision and making good time of it. And that's, you know, that's what we're drawn to.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And he's not doing himself any favors with independent voters, and he's certainly not doing himself any favors with the Democratic base. We've got to turn out working people. We've got to turn out middle-class people. We've got to turn out young people, blacks and Hispanics. And it's not so easy to do when unemployment is 9%. The way you do it is you do what Harry Truman did. You challenge the Congress to meet the needs of working people in the middle class, of young people. And when they don't do it, you give them hell. And that, which means you got to draw a contrast. And the Republicans gave us a great opportunity. They passed a budget that would cut Medicare and Medicaid. These are two extremely popular programs. They've been talking about cutting Social Security. Now is the time to draw a contrast between our ideals and their ideals. It's not the time to make a deal with them, especially since this deal that is going to lead to a further deal that could wind up cutting Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security at the end of this year, and that would be an utter and total disaster.
I've taken the position that really there was no downside for the Republicans here. They want across-the-board cuts, a 2% across-the-board cuts. I don't even think they'd be – I think that's too little for them. But as the stick in the carrot-and-stick scenario, not much of a stick, more like a twig.
Yeah, you know, either way we're in trouble. If they get a deal with this new congressional committee at the end of the year, it's a deal we're not going to like because it's going to lead to Social Security cuts, Medicare cuts, Medicaid cuts. If they don't get a deal, we're looking at another $1 trillion of cuts in discretionary spending. You know what? I'm getting sick of that term discretionary spending because it hides what it's all about. If we cut discretionary spending, what does that mean? More air and water pollution. Fewer kids getting pre-K education. Larger classrooms in elementary and secondary schools. Less help for our kids to go to colleges. More bridges and roads that are falling down that are in a state of bad repair. Less research on life-threatening diseases. This is not fluff. This is not stuff that the government shouldn't be doing. These are some of the core functions of the government. That's discretionary spending, protecting our borders, going after people who rob banks and who going after the terrorist threat.
And all of
that's
those,
stuff
all
the government should be doing.
Yep, and all of
this
those are
jobs. This is what they're going to cut.
And all
and
of those are
on top
jobs.
Of it, all of those get cut. Yep. You know, and we got to stop talking using this term discretionary spending. We got to tell people what this is about.
And all of those are jobs, the exact thing that could get us out of our deficit problems. I mean, you look at the number of jobs that we've cut in the public sector since the beginning of January. I think I read somewhere around 500,000 jobs nationwide we've lost. Those are 500,000 taxpayers who are no longer paying taxes. That's revenue that's not coming in, and yet they keep telling us we can cut our way out of this without raising revenue. If you keep cutting, don't we end up all down the drain anyway?
Yeah. I mean, when you add up all this discretionary spending, you end up with a big reduction in the government, which means fewer jobs, which means less money in people's pockets, which means less money they can spend in the private sector. People say the stimulus didn't work, but you know what? The stimulus, first of all, stopped us from a second Great Depression. And second of all, we didn't have that much stimulus because while the government is going into debt in the federal level, as it should, states are cutting back left and right. You know, if we had just used the federal government to help states keep those 500,000 public sector jobs in place, and then you add in the impact of those 500,000 public sector jobs on the private sector, the unemployment picture would be looking a lot better today.
And all of our problems, in my opinion, Mark Steer, all of our problems, I believe, are tied to our trade deals. All of these insane free trade agreements we have with all these countries around the world that we've had trade deficits with since 1975. At the end of this, I think we got a real problem. Did I lose him? I think we lost Mark. But the truth be told, that's what it is. With our trade problems, if we could fix that very simple trade, to me it's simple. If we could fix that, we would have our debt problems solved. Once you balance that budget with China, once you balance that budget with all these third world countries that we've moved our manufacturing to, that we've moved all of our jobs to, we could solve those problems. Mark, thanks for calling back.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I got agitated and I pulled the phone cord out.
Well, you know, hey, sometimes I understand it. But what I said while you were gone is I think the answer is our trade policies. If we could fix our trade policy to where we actually encourage jobs to come back here, maybe not encourage, but mandated, maybe with some tariffs, maybe with some protective barriers, if you will, I think our debt problems and our deficit problems take care of themselves by having more people employed.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot we could do there. And you know, we need to start addressing some myths about the fact that companies go to other countries because workers there get paid so much less and are more productive. The fact is, that's not why they go. Most of the time, the workers in other countries, in less developed countries in particular, are much less productive than American workers, even when you factor in the lower wages. Companies go abroad because this is a way to gain leverage on American workers.
Absolutely.
It's all about trying to drive down American wages. That's why they cut public sector jobs as well. They want to drive down American wages. That is the Republican strategy right now, and we need to call them out on it.
And I got to be honest, that the one thing that I had hoped for President Obama when he took office, and I've said this 1,000 times, I had hoped he was going to be the guy who saved work in this country by passing some decent labor law reform so that you wouldn't see the wage theft that you're seeing going on every day in this country. That he would have said, you know, we're going to do like FDR did during the Depression and give workers a floor for which to stand on. And he just hasn't done that. I mean, he's gone the pro-business route, and I'm not anti-business, but, you know, he's going to the Colombian way. Maybe not throwing people out of planes, but close to it, I think.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. We had a golden moment to do two things that Democrats haven't done for working people. One is to improve health care, give everyone access to quality, affordable health care, and we pass some good legislation which will almost get us there. Unfortunately, it doesn't go into effect for another year or two. And the second thing was to labor law reform and help strengthen unions, which would strengthen the progressive movement. And that just, you know, went by the board. And, you know, we're basically ignoring the jobs issue again and again and again. And you know, when I was talking to a friend of mine who works for one of the construction trades, and he's a strong Obama supporter, worked really hard for Obama, and he said, how am I going to go back to my members and tell them to vote for Obama again when they're suffering, you know, jobs losses? You know, it's a tough case to make.
It is.
You know, we can't count on the Republicans doing us a favor by nominating Michelle Bachmann.
See, now, I would love to have Michelle Bachmann. I would love to see her as the Republican nominee.
She's our dream candidate. There's no question about it.
But then again, Reagan was the dream candidate in 1980 as well. So,
you know, here's my fear. You know the moment from 1980 I'm talking about. The Republicans are going to nominate someone who's run a race that has been tilted in the direction of this right-wing lunacy that has taken control of the party. And we're all going to think, there's no way this country's going to vote for a right-wing lunatic. But most people aren't going to know who this woman or man is until they see him in a debate. Yep. And we're going to come to a debate, and they're going to sound reasonable, and they're going to sound personable, and people will relax. And then at the end of that debate, they'll say, are you better now than you were 4 years ago? And it's hard for people to remember just how bad things were when Bush was president at the end. And, you know, we could get in trouble. Now, it's really, really important that for all his failings, we reelect Obama, because the alternative is just horrible to behold. And because if we don't reelect Obama, the Affordable Care Act is going to be repealed.
Yeah. That,
but I'm just worried about how we're going to do it right now if the president keeps going down this path.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Mark. And the reason I'm going to vote for him is Anthony Kennedy.
That's one more reason.
That's absolutely my reason. That's my rationale. Mark, always great talking to you. I appreciate your thoughts on this. Anytime you've got a couple of minutes, give us a call and fill us in.
Okay. Good talking to you, too.
Thanks.
Keep up the good work on your show, Rick.
All right. Thanks so much, Mark Steer. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, talk about this a little bit more when we get back. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
We're
bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
As narrators used to say in Western movies, meanwhile, back at the ranch, our policymakers in Washington had totally lost sight of what's happening at the ranch. Both John Boehner's GOP-controlled House and Barack Obama's White House are riveted on slashing trillions of dollars from the federal budget, as though that's America's most important need. Bovine excrement. If they had lift their vision to the countryside, even they could figure out that our great economic urgency is for the creation of good middle-class jobs to get America moving again, moving upward and moving together. Today, we are a dangerously disunited society. Elite CEOs and big investors are grabbing all the gains, leaving the vast majority mired in recession and facing falling incomes. Since the recession technically ended 18 months ago, corporate profits have zoomed, sopping up an unprecedented 88% of America's economic growth. Meanwhile, only 1% of the growth that we all help produce has gone to wages and salaries, which is the source of income for about 90% of us. Yet those same CEOs say they won't invest in new jobs or raise wages until consumers start buying again. That's like saying the beatings will continue until morale improves. Hello, the consumer CEOs are waiting on are the workers whose jobs and wages the CEOs won't increase. This is Jim Hightower saying, you see, despite the GOP's ideological claptrap about corporate executives being job creators, it is ordinary Americans who actually create jobs by spending from their paychecks. This is why our obtuse policymakers need to quit pampering the rich and start launching a national FDR-style jobs program that'll immediately increase paychecks, perk up consumer spending, and generate grassroots economic growth.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. During the break, I got an email, and you can email me too, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. I do answer all of them personally, and even use a couple of them on the air. Roxy writes, great choice in music, Road to Nowhere. I need to pull that out because it's how I feel right now. She says, we had the moments to do the right thing. Yet, we get bullied all the time by politics. She says, I've had enough. I'm hearing from mad Democrats, mad Tea Party members, mad people in general. Perhaps the country is all gone mad. I'm not sure where we're going or what I'm to tell people. How many more years of this will we have to deal with this? And, you know, I got to be honest, you know, this should not have been the fight that it turned into. This should have been, as it has been in the past, not up to the last minute, you know, drop dead date, but it should have been rational people coming to a rational decision on that issue. The place to argue all of our spending is at the time when you pass the bills. And I don't know about you, Jake, but, you know, I look at this and I say, these are the very people who caused the biggest stinks are the ones who caused this problem. And now they want to point the finger at Obama. And this is where I cut him a lot of slack. This wasn't his creation. He was dealt crappy cards. He's played them poorly, but he was still dealt a really crummy hand.
Well, but Rick, I got to admit, I got tired of seeing the president acting like he was drawing a line in the sand. The Republicans find out what the bill is. The Republicans make more demands, and then he acquiesces, and this happened several times. Why didn't he just do the thing that we advocated and use the 14th Amendment? If I can say one thing here on a key issue, you know, people seem to think that what we have to do is just go after, when I say people, the general consensus out there is, well, we might have to look at Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Of course, we're going to have to look at corporate tax breaks. We're going to have to look at the welfare for the rich. But one area I think it absolutely has to be addressed if we're really serious, and that is defense. According to Barney Frank tonight, he had an interview several hours ago. They agreed to a split of 50-50, military, non-military. That sounds good. It also sounds good when they say, okay, we're going to have caps on military spending, but here's the bad thing, Rick. There was no agreement on any cap for military spending in Afghanistan or Iraq, and after 2 years, guess what? There's no guarantee of any caps on military spending. Major mistake. We're gonna have to come to grips with military spending, and we're not talking about putting this country at risk. I don't want to hear any of that right-wing garbage. We can make some big cuts in military spending and still be safe. We're gonna have to address that. It can't be a sacred cow.
1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Let's go to the phones. I got Ike on line one. How you doing tonight, Ike?
Hey guys, yeah, I can think of a couple of wars you could shut down in a quick hurry and let them fight it out. I don't care. I'm sick of trying to provide hospitals and roads and schools and health care for people in Iraq and Afghanistan when we're suffering here.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
You know, well, and I haven't been paying attention to this. I've seen this has been a bunch of carnival barking going on here, and I don't think that the cards are all on the table yet, and I don't think that we actually know the dirty deal that's been proposed and accepted and what these idiots are up to in the back rooms, and that's something that really burns me up. You know, to slop it off on a committee and then have an automatic trigger, and the committee's going to be landlocked 6-6, what good are you doing? You know, you're not going to do any good. The six Republicans are going to want what they want. The six Democrats are going to want what they want. And then it's like, oh, well, we couldn't come to agreement, so guess what? We're going to let the automatic cuts get in. You know, this is abdication of responsibility. This shows that they can't govern, you know, and this shows that the power plays that needed to be played were played on one side of the court, and the other side just sat there and bounced their ball and never took a shot. That's what I see.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you, but at the end of this, what I don't want this to turn into is an anti-government rant, an anti-we the people rant. This is still our government. What we have to do is those people who held this up, those people who caused this, we have to remember this for November. We have to remember to get those people who obstructed, delayed, and gridlocked, we have to get them the hell out.
Well, and I've got two things that I thought would be a solution to the problem for a long time. For years, I thought, number one, public financing of all campaigns.
Right there with
that's
you.
The first thing they should do.
Yep.
Number two, we need a mechanism to jerk these jerks out of office if they're not going to perform and they're not going to do what they want to do. I know a lot of people say term limits, but the last thing I want in there is a politician that has no threat of being thrown out of office, you know, that knows that they're on the e-ticket on the way out and they can do whatever they want.
Yep.
That's not a responsible politician. You've got to have some weight. You got to have some threat. You got to have something on them to the point that they get the pressure point of you either perform or we can get you out and we don't have to wait until the next election. We need a little bit more of the parliamentary system somehow or another.
Well, or recalls like they have in Wisconsin.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, I think every state should have recall, and I think we should be able to recall any federal or, you know, any official, period. You know, I've said that forever. And, you know, meanwhile, it's been diagnosed as of Friday. Yeah, I've got cancer, and I'm going in the system. And I'm going in there broke. But let me point something out to your listeners and to you guys. Just remember this. This country has prided itself and made its bones by using slave and cheap labor. They've done it since the beginning, and they continue to do it. If it ain't me, it's a Latino. If it ain't a Latino, it's Vietnamese. If it ain't a Vietnamese, it's a poor black guy. Around and around and around we go. And business owners seem to think it's just okay. Well, here's the deal, guys. Okay, you wanted cheap labor, you got your cheap labor. You've had cheap labor ever since we started. We don't get what we deserve. We never have. That we got a little bit of it when we had a strong union structure, but now we get nothing, and we're going to get less. Now they want even more from us. They can play their games, and they can pass their laws, but guess what? In the end, what happens in the street is what's going to cause this whole thing to turn upside down, and I'm telling you, they continue to play with fire, and they don't really, I don't think that they have a clue. I think it's very much time they get a very strong wake-up, and, you know, hey, like I said, if we can get some money, man, to put up some buses, the Koch brothers seem to be able to do it. Well, you know, I've got all the time in the world now. I'll tell you what, why don't you just go ahead and bless me up there with another million people, and we'll hang out for, I don't know, what, a week, a month? Oh, I don't give a damn. How about a year?
It's a good idea, but there are no money. There are very few money people on the other side, or so I'm finding. Ike, I'm really sorry to hear about your condition, though. I hope the best. I hope that now that you're, I guess, into the system, you'll get some care, correct?
Yeah, I'm going in next week. I'm going in next week, and I've already got bills piling up. But, you know, hey, you can't get blood out of a turnip. But, again, it's not because I don't want to pay my bills. It's because I can't find decent employment at a decent wage structure, and I can't get access to the insurance and the things I need to be able to participate in the game that they set up. But they don't want me to be there because they want cheap labor. So you got cheap labor, so guess what? You're going to pay for it in the end anyway.
Well, I wish you nothing but the best, brother, and get well.
I'll be in touch, bro.
Thank you so much. You know, you look at this, and at the end of the day, you know, as he said, when we had a strong, vibrant labor movement in this country, this kind of stuff didn't happen. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer is a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin, but the wait is... Everything's raisin, but the wait is... Gasoline, groceries, and our hate is... Everything's raisin, but the wait is...
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Jared Bernstein, former chief economist for the vice president's office, wrote today that these cuts will hurt our ability to pursue what I view as most positive aspects of the president's economic agenda. Investments in infrastructure, clean energy, research, education. They will pinch programs that are already budget constrained, programs that help low-income people with children, housing, and community services. And, you know, that's, you know, the idea. I really believe that was the point, to continue to make that desperation class, to continue to push low-wage workforce to bring everybody down. And you look at the article that was in the Agency France-Presse today that points out that, you know, U.S. corporations are more profitable than they've been in generations. And even with this high unemployment, even with the debt ceiling, they're amazingly profitable. In fact, 72% of the S&P 500 from the large cap list have beat analysts' forecasts for profits. I mean, that is astounding. Considering the rest of us are in really a crummy economic environment. And by taking this money away, by saying we're not going to invest more, and by saying we're going to do what it is that's coming down the road, that means higher unemployment. I mean, you look at the people, 3M, Caterpillar, Goodyear, Microsoft, Apple, all-time revenue highs. All-time revenue highs. And you look at all these companies who are showing massive profits, laying people off, saying, you know what, there's a way for us to fill our coffers. You know, like we were talking about last week with the J.P. Morgan analyst who said that, you know, since the mid-60s, profits have not been higher than they are right now. And the reason that they're so high is we've been able to steal back wage gains. We've been able to steal benefits. And that has added to the bottom line. And yet, to me, that should be the first thing that every Democrat throws out there. Look, these companies are wildly profitable. Why aren't they hiring? All of these tax handouts we've given out, all of these incentives to hire, all of this stuff that we've said, here, please. And they've said no. You know, during the Bush years, you know, $550 million per job, and they didn't even create that. You know, which I find hysterical now that I hear the Grover Norquists and all of these right-wing pundits going, you know, the Obama plan, when we did the stimulus, it cost $200,000 a job. Where were you back when Bush was handing out money, $550,000 per job, and didn't even create the million jobs that he was supposed to create? That was the plan, to spend $550 million per job. If you remember it, $550 billion, across-the-board tax cut, create a million new jobs. They didn't create those million jobs. So they planned on $550,000 a piece, but they probably spent double that. And I asked then, and I'll ask now, you know, how do I get one of those jobs? I can point to some of the jobs that Obama created. I can point to some of the jobs that he's saved by investing in infrastructure, by investing here at home. Problem is, we've got trade policies that if we do some investment, we get stuff from China to put in it. We're going to put a big wind farm down in Texas. Where are we going to get all the turbines from? China. We're going to build a bridge in California. Where are we going to get the steel? China. And we wonder why we're not creating jobs. We've got these bizarre trade policies. Say, oh, yeah, never mind. Just open it. Come on, back up the truck. Sure. Back up the boat. Drop it all off. Put it here. Get that American stuff out of the way. I mean, that seems to be what they're telling us, right? And at the end of this whole shenanigans, this whole charade, this whole political theater that the radicals put on for us, diverted us from the realities that corporate America is stealing from us, and that our trade policy are screwing us, and if there's another hostage situation already going on. When they said, oh yeah, we're not gonna reauthorize that FAA bill. No more money. We're gonna cut those 4,000 people off at the knees. We're gonna cut that 90,000 to 200,000 workers, cut them off. Because and this is the Republicans' official position. Well, you know, we want to cut $16.5 million to the Rural Air Service. So the Democrats were against cutting that. So that's why we're against the bill. So Jay Rockefeller came out and said, yeah, we'll gut that out. Even though some of that Rural Air Service was to state like West Virginia. And they said, I don't know. No. Well, we know what the reason was. The real reason was is they didn't want to put that piece in there for workers to organize. They like it just the way it is. It's plain nuts, and yet we fall for it. We're stuck looking at this whole debacle, this whole political theater, this whole sham, and getting all worked up about it. End of the world's coming. And look, had we seen a doubling of interest rates, I do believe we would see a major crisis. I do believe that. When employers can no longer borrow money to pay between that period of production and sale, everything stops. When you lose that elasticity, everything stops. And I listened to this. I don't know. I want to get into it now, but I listened to this woman on C-SPAN this weekend. She's the head of the Tea Party Express or Tea Party something or other. And she was talking about no debt is good debt. There's a mindset in this country that no debt is good debt. And I ask, how many people have mortgages? How many people bought a car? It's just this mindset that's been pounded into no such thing as good debt. Yes, there is. When you build a road, when you build a bridge, when you build a school, when you build a hospital, when you build things that are going to provide revenue, going to provide service for years, generations, it's worth the investment. But we've got a segment of folks who they're hell bent on no debt, and they believe in the corporate image. They believe fully in the benevolency of corporate America, which is why I find it interesting that HSBC, the big bank, they're going to slash up to 30,000 jobs worldwide over the next 2 years. Cost-cutting drive, gotta make sure we're competitive with the market. When we see everybody else cutting jobs, when Goldman Sachs is cutting jobs, we gotta be right there. Because we got to be in defense of the market. If everybody else is cutting jobs, we got to be there too. This way we can be as profitable. Now understand, they're a pretty profitable bank, doing pretty well. But, it's all that in defense of the market. And I love that. We're okay today. But in 30 years, we may lose something. So we're going to make our people starve now. Do you find that funny? I don't. I find that sad.
The sad part about it is, Rick, I mean, you talk about these things and you make perfect logical sense, but unfortunately, you know them. I know them. You talk to people. You talk about people talking to them at restaurants, where you go to eat, where you meet. Too many people say the same, well, we got to tighten our belt. It's just like your family budget. There's an amazing amount of ignorance as to how our government really works. And how much investing in the right things long-term, temporarily going in debt, has helped this country. And how those individuals who tell you that we have to tighten our belt, those same individuals have benefited greatly. And I don't know how you change that, Rick. There has to be a real change in the attitude of the American people. Maybe it's like we keep saying, maybe not enough people have empty stomachs. Maybe that's what it's going to take. I hope not for the sake of the country, but it really is very disconcerting when you talk to some people out there and their absolute ignorance as to how their government works.
Scary, scary stuff. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Mike Ludwig. He's got a great piece over at truthout.org on fracking. Fracking operations caused thousands of earthquakes in Arkansas, he writes. We're right back after this.
For the rest of us, Rick Smith. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
The Pew Research Center released a study last week that shows a staggering racial wealth gap. According to the study, in 2009, the median wealth of white households was 20 times that of black households and 18 times that of Hispanic households. According to Pew, the lopsided ratios are the largest since the government first began releasing such data. It shows that the recession and housing bubble hit minorities much harder than white households. Hispanics saw their median wealth fall by 66% since 2006, and black households saw a decrease of 53%. In comparison, the decline of median wealth for white households was barely a blip, declining 16%. The typical white household held $113,000 in assets in 2009, while Hispanic and black households both held less than $7,000 in assets. The average net worth of Hispanic households was $18,000 in 2005. The union has filed charges against Hyatt for turning heat lamps on picketers, as Unite Here's Chicago Hyatt hotel strike continues. Doug Cunningham takes a look at the issues behind this strike.
If you're in solidarity with workers and you're traveling to Chicago, striking Hyatt workers ask that you don't stay at Hyatt hotels in the Windy City.
Support the boycott not to come inside these hotels if they're not going to treat the workers what their chests do. Our workers are standing up for what's right.
Will Spain is door captain at one of the Chicago Hyatts. Spain says the main issue is job security.
The Hyatt has added temp workers to work alongside our folks to try to take away their jobs. We need the support from the community. We need support from the religious leaders.
Before striking, the workers bargained with Hyatt for 20 months. Unite Here says Hyatt is owned by billionaires, yet wants to outsource work and impose dangerous conditions on housekeepers. The American Journal of Industrial Medicine found in 2010 that Hyatt housekeepers had the highest injury rates of the five major hotel companies.
They do a 16-room quota a day, and they're beaten down. They can't go home and feed their families at the end of the day.
The emergency financial manager for Detroit Public Schools will unilaterally slash worker pay by 10%. Roy Roberts made the announcement on Friday, adding that employees will also be responsible for a 20% increase in health care costs. Roberts can make such decisions due to new powers emergency financial managers received under legislation passed in Michigan earlier this year. The pay cut starts on August 23rd, and the benefits hike starts on September 1st. Unions representing teachers and faculty are planning to challenge the decision in court.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Now we all ought to feel just a little bit guilty when we look into the eyes of our kids. Cause brothers, it's a fact, if we take and don't put back, they'll have to pay for all we did. So let's leave some blue up above us. Let's leave some green on the ground. It's only us to follow. Let's save some for tomorrow. Leave it and pass it on down.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Susie Madrick over at Crooks and Liars says it's official. July was a scorcher. High temperatures in communities across the U.S. broke or tied records 2,676 times, and we're only at the beginning of August, almost double the number of 1,444 a year ago. She asked, think we could talk about climate change yet? And while we... The big money keeps pushing the Sergeant Schultz clip. The rational people are trying to figure out how we slow the process and maybe perhaps stop it. Many believe natural gas is the answer to us getting off the oil, but the reality has shown that there's a downside, like nuclear power. What are we going to do with the waste? Mike Ludwig has written a piece over at truthout.org on what's going on in Arkansas with their hazardous frac fluid. Mike, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, hi, Rick. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. I'm looking at this piece, and I'm saying, you know, causing earthquakes. Tell me about it.
Right, yeah, the Arkansas Oil and Gas Commission banned new wastewater wells. That's fracking wastewater. It's liquid that was injected into the ground and then came back up. They banned new injection wells in two counties in central Arkansas recently because after months of research, geologists there concluded that these injection wells were causing earthquakes.
You know, I I've been talking about this for some time because I don't know if you remember, but in the late 60s, early 70s, they were talking about the exact same thing in Rangeley, Colorado. The military was really pushing stuff underground at such high temperatures. It was causing tons of earthquakes. And, you know, you see this and you go, when are we going to learn our lesson?
Right, yeah, you know, the gas industry is experimenting with new ways to deal with wastewater right now because fracking has just expanded and blown up across the United States, you know, in Pennsylvania, soon to be in New York, West Virginia, and also in Arkansas and across states in the West. You know, the demand for domestic fuel is very high right now, and there isn't real federal regulation of hydraulic fracturing at this point. So, you know, these gas companies are trying to get as much of it done as quickly as possible. And they've been having problems with the wastewater that comes up from these wells. And here, you know, we have wastewater being injected back into the ground near an active fault and then lubricating that fault to cause about 1,200 earthquakes that residents felt for months.
You know, I remember when I was in Ohio, Ashtabula, Ohio, they had kind of the same thing. They had opened up one of these injection sites. They were starting to get all of these low range earthquakes going on. A lot of, and the state said, no, it couldn't possibly be that. It's just a little water we're pushing underground. No big thing. And now we see the state of Ohio is encouraging Pennsylvania to send all of its frack fluid, all of this hazardous stuff there, because their economy is so bad. And I go, you know, how bad do you have to be when you're encouraging hazardous waste to be pumped under your feet?
Well, that's interesting because the gas companies are saying that this waste is not hazardous, that it's mostly water, and what few chemicals they do put in the fluids, you know, are not very dangerous for the environment and can be treated at wastewater treatment facilities. You know, the state of Pennsylvania recently told the companies to stop sending all their water to public facilities, and now they're racing to find different areas and avenues to get this wastewater treated. And there's been a struggle within the environmental movement to get these companies to release information about the chemicals that are in this water. You know, the gas companies say that it's safe, but they've recently started voluntarily reporting some of these chemicals. And I was just looking at a database today, and I saw formaldehyde. I saw 2-butoxyethanol, which was blamed for poisoning cleanup workers after the Exxon Valdez spill. I saw methanol and several other chemicals that I wouldn't want, you know, anywhere near my farm or stream.
You know, you look at this stuff, and they won't tell you what's exactly in it because they claim it's proprietary. But at the end of the day, if you're pumping this stuff underground and the idea that it's going to break up rocks and cause fissures, I got to be honest, I don't think I want it in my drinking water.
Right, yeah. And that's interesting because what we see here in Arkansas is basically bad planning. You know, where they got the idea to inject this wastewater near an active fault, I don't know. They're just, you know, I talked to a geologist with the State Survey Service, and he said, you know, in the future, they've got to do a little bit more research. But with this fracking gold rush happening right now, I think they're opening too many wells too fast.
Yep.
And what's different about the fracking that's happening now is, you know, it used to just be vertical. It went straight into the ground. Now they're branching off and doing horizontal fracturing of rock, which has been blamed for water contamination across the country.
So as you say those words, I hope people are listening to the realities that what's going on here in the state of Pennsylvania, and we're really at the beginning, we're at the tip of this whole thing. I say the next 10 years we're going to see an explosion of the number of needles that are punched into our ground as they try and extract the gas out from under our feet. Of course, we can't get any tax dollars out of because we've got a corporate governor here who has taken the Grover Norquist no tax pledge. So no benefits for the state of Pennsylvania for the resource that's under our ground. But I look at this and I go, you know, at the end of the day, it's still our air, our water, and our soil that we're going to have to clean up at some point. You know, you look at the coal industry, same scenario.
Right, yeah. You know, Pennsylvania's had 2 blowouts of fracking wells since last June. And, you know, taxpayers in your state may not be getting any revenues back, but they are paying for what little environmental protection and enforcement the Department of Environmental Protection in Pennsylvania can provide. And so far this year, I'm looking at their spreadsheet right now, they've handed out 1,700 violations to gas companies so far this year, and there were, you know, hundreds more last year as well.
And that industry was, you know, the EPA was the one of the things that cut their budget, was cut in this last budget. So that number should be even higher, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's just one of those
Absolutely,
things.
Absolutely, yeah.
And when you look at this, let me ask you this. You know, as we're going down the road, they're saying that this natural gas is going to be the answer to our oil problems. I see this being a whole set of other problems with air pollution, water pollution. What are other areas going through?
Well, it depends the way you're looking at it. And a lot of areas right now are, you know, for instance, like New York also shares the Marcellus Shale with Pennsylvania, and they just lifted their moratorium, and they're looking into tougher regulations to allow it in their state. When you look at, you know, what states are doing to regulate it, they're kind of on their own. There isn't any real federal regulations. The Environmental Protection Agency is currently conducting a study on fracking, and they won't suggest any new regulations until that study comes out, which is at the earliest is going to be next year. You know, Ohio basically just opened up the floodgates. West Virginia has, you know, is famously pro, you know, drilling and mining, and they've opened up the floodgates. So is Pennsylvania. New York thinks they can do it a little bit differently, where they have, you know, the right regulations in place and hold these companies accountable, then maybe they can prevent some of the problems we've seen in Ohio and Pennsylvania.
So in the Arkansas case, what made them event? Because I know in Ohio, the state of Ohio fought vehemently to have anybody stay away from that impact site. How were they able to figure out that it was that high-pressure situation that was doing that?
Well, in Arkansas, basically citizens started speaking out. And one citizen even filed a lawsuit against the gas companies because he claims that one of the earthquakes actually damaged his property. But other citizens were feeling the earthquakes as well. They started getting together and they started organizing, and they brought this, you know, they brought this to the media and they brought it to the Oil and Gas Commission, and they demanded answers. So, you know, the Gas Commission had first put a moratorium on new wells, then it proposed to ban any wells in this area near this fault, and then just this week, after months of deliberation study, they said, yes, there is a direct connection between these earthquakes and these injection wells near this fault. We're going to ban all new wells and all existing wells in the future. But it took, you know, an effort from the average people in the area speaking up. And that, you can see that across the country. You know, I was just talking to an activist who's an environmental activist, and he's fighting, you know, to get bans passed in New Jersey and New York. But he said he's never seen so many just average folks coming out to oppose fracking. People that have never been involved in environmental issues before are getting involved in the grassroots movement because it's their groundwater, their farms, and their streams that could be affected.
Yeah, and they're not the ones benefiting from it. You know, not like Alaska, where the good socialist governor Sarah Palin made sure that every citizen in the state got a check from the industry.
Right.
Real quick to finish this up, you know, they've stopped this in Arkansas. Any indication that it's stopped the earthquakes, or will there be some ramifications here in the next couple of weeks, months, maybe even years?
Well, I talked to a geologist down there who told me that after they placed a temporary moratorium on new injections, which was, I believe, in February, the number of earthquakes reduced almost immediately by two-thirds and have started to dwindle ever since. And that was their first hint, I guess, that there was a problem and a possible correlation. I believe that the latest data I saw was that the earthquakes have you know, the rumblings have kind of calmed down, but it took until after the operation stopped.
All righty. Well, Mike, I appreciate the piece over at truthout.org. Fracking operations caused thousands of earthquakes in Arkansas. There's a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Mike, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Rick.
All right. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
Working class majority.
as narrators used to say in Western movies. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, our policymakers in Washington had totally lost sight of what's happening at the ranch. Both John Boehner's GOP-controlled House and Barack Obama's White House are riveted on slashing trillions of dollars from the federal budget, as though that's America's most important need. Bovine excrement. If they had lift their vision to the countryside, even they could figure out that our great economic urgency is for the creation of good middle-class jobs to get America moving again, moving upward and moving together. Today, we are a dangerously disunited society. Elite CEOs and big investors are grabbing all the gains, leaving the vast majority mired in recession and facing falling incomes. Since the recession technically ended 18 months ago, corporate profits have zoomed, sopping up an unprecedented 88% of America's economic growth. Meanwhile, only 1% of the growth that we all help produce has gone to wages and salaries, which is the source of income for about 90% of us. Yet those same CEOs say they won't invest in new jobs or raise wages until consumers start buying again. That's like saying the beatings will continue until morale improves. Hello, the consumers CEOs are waiting on are the workers whose jobs and wages the CEOs won't increase. This is Jim Hightower saying, you see, despite the GOP's ideological claptrap about corporate executives being job creators, it is ordinary Americans who actually create jobs by spending from their paychecks. This is why our obtuse policymakers need to quit pampering the rich and start launching a national FDR-style jobs program that'll immediately increase paychecks, perk up consumer spending, and generate grassroots economic growth.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, even the last one, you can download our podcast right there. And if you've got one of those smartphones like I've got, you can download the Stitcher app and take your class war on the go. Our stat of the day comes from the people over at the Too Much Online blog. They write, how adept at avoiding taxes have America's top CEOs become? On paper, the corporations they lead must pay a 35% federal income tax on their profit, the second highest corporate tax in the world. In real life, notes a new Greenlining Institute report, major U.S. corporations are now paying only 18.3% of their domestic profits in tax. Of the world's 26 major industrial nations, only two collect less in corporate taxes as a share of GDP than the U.S. So, you know, here we're at the very bottom. They say, oh, you're at the top. We tax too much. Yet here we are in a situation where you're collecting so much less. And the argument to this, Jake, would be, well, if they're only paying 18.4%, we should drop that 35% down to 20%. So that they'll consider paying their taxes. And I would say that if we drop it down to 20%, you'll see that 18.4 going down to 15 or lower.
Rick, let's be honest. Greed knows no bounds. I hear the Republicans, and not just the Tea Party people in Congress, saying we need to lower that corporate tax rate. And you just look at them and you just shake your head and you wonder, wow. I mean, is there no end to greed? I mean, where is their sense of fairness? I guess there is none.
Well, is there no end to our stupidity that we would buy that argument? So let me get this straight. It's 35% now. They're paying 18. We should lower it to 20 in the hopes that they're going to pay more than 18. Am I getting that right? They've got a situation now where they're getting away with 18.
But, Rick, you're missing their point. Their point is, you know, if we lower their taxes, they're just going to create all these. Where have we heard this before?
We've heard it.
Where have we heard this before for the last 30 years? And where are they? We've heard this. Lower the tax rate. Companies will have more money to invest, and they're going to create jobs all over the place. And they have, as you said, I heard you say at least a dozen times, they've created jobs all right in China.
Yep. Let's go to the mailbag. Andy writes, Rick, you mentioned the new MPG goal, 54.5 by 2025. He says you ought to look at the comparison of our fuel economy standard in comparison with the rest of the world. European car manufacturers are expected to hit 60 miles per gallon by 2020. These 7/5/11 Financial Times pointed out U.S. planned care emissions cut. Chinese manufacturers, he writes, are looking for a 42.2 MPG by 2015. He writes at 54.5 by 2025 will still be behind the rest of the world. And I guess that's the point. You know, I look at the 54.5. That seems kind of far out. It seems like an awful lot. And I'm amazed that the U.S. car industry, that the car industry agreed to it, considering the power that they have. So maybe this 54.5 was the best he was going to get without them saying, you'll get nothing. And as we've seen, our boy, not the greatest negotiator. He should take a few notes from William Shatner. The Priceline negotiator. Especially with that commercial with that really big guy. Take a really big guy in the negotiations with it. Give him a couple of smacks around. That'll straighten things out, I think. Janice writes, are we surprised with the debt talks? Really? This is exactly what happened during the health care debate. Republicans were willing to gridlock to get their way. The real discussion about health care, much like the debt talks, should have been around morality and our commitment to one another. I agree, Janice. She goes on to say, it is, as you point out, easy to cut things from people they never see. I was hoping when the healthcare talks were going on that I might have a shot. Healthcare debate should have centered around one, as a society making the moral decision to provide healthcare to all of our citizens, two, remove the profit incentive from the healthcare industry, and three, have a single payer system to streamline administrative costs. And I got to be honest, Janice, all arguments I've made in the past would have been nice to see a single payer system come out. Wasn't possible with the bent knee conservative Democrats that we had, the Max Backdoors of the world. And that's really the problem here. I don't envy Obama. I look at what he's got to deal with, and look, he's not the most steely of spined, in my opinion, to begin with. But when you're dealing with a whole bunch of people who are ready to jump ship at any time, you're dealt some pretty bad cards.
Well, you know, watching him, and I'm not necessarily an expert, this is just me, Rick. This man, in some ways, is brilliant. He has delivered some of the most dynamic speeches I've ever heard in my life. And at a certain level, he's brilliant. However, is he at the time where he thinks that he can successfully negotiate with almost anyone at any level? These people are not. I think he's just missing a point. And I think maybe he thinks he can, by sheer force of you know, moral right, that he can pull these people a little bit his way. These people have their feet dug in up to their waist. They're not gonna compromise. And he seems to be doing this over and over and over again. He tries to compromise, tries to get in there and you know, give and take, give and take, give and take.
See, I'm gonna disagree with that a little bit. I think his problem is that he wants to govern the way the Constitution kind of lays it out. That the budget and all of the things have to emanate out of the House of Representatives. That he's not really a leader. And in today's world, everyone looks to the head guy as the head guy. Where's your leadership quality? Which is why we kept hearing, where's your plan? Where's Obama's plan? Where's Obama's plan? Truth of the matter is he was waiting for something to come out of the House. He was waiting for that to happen, I think. I think that's his problem. That maybe as a constitutional lawyer, as a constitutional scholar, he's a guy who actually understands the Constitution and tries to follow it. And that's where he gets his butt kicked. Because we haven't done that for a while.
What you're telling me, Rick, is maybe he's perhaps too principled. Is that what you're saying?
Principled, maybe.
And I mean that in the best sense. Is he trying to be too principled within the framework of what sometimes is, let's be honest, it's a cesspool?
What is a cesspool? But he's trying.
I would like to see him be a brawler. I don't see anything wrong with that. I don't see anything in getting in there and really mixing it up and fighting the good fight to the absolute end. I think his way of governing is compromise, compromise, compromise. Well, sometimes that doesn't work.
Well, I think he's trying to be seen as the adult in the room. And he's willing to make those compromises because, after all, he is the adult in the room. And we're going to see when the ballots come out next November. Because all of this, I think, is going to be front and center next November. I think these are going to be election times. I think people are going to keep bringing up the fact that, you know, the Republicans won this. And it'll be interesting to see where we go with this. I got another email. When I was taken aback by a caller that remained neutral over privatization of the post office in your 621 podcast, privatizing the post office, it was his nonchalant attitude about privatization that upset me. He didn't care. Anytime you hear privatization, you should run for the hills. He says this is Wall Street's way to get another revenue source. Wall Street will get the investment banking business, raising bond debt and equity that must first take place of public tax generated funding. And you know, I look at this and you go, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I was taken back by that as well. The fact that, yeah, I don't care if the post office is privatized or not, especially living in a rural area where that's going to be one of the very first places cut, much like, you know, with the FAA, with the air service. First place they're going after, rural areas where there's not a lot of profit. You know, if it weren't for laws that make the post office deliver to places like, you know, Carlisle or Shippensburg or Chambersburg or any of these places 20, 30, 40 years ago where there was nothing, do you think it would have happened? No. Do you think that if it weren't for the Electrification Act, that back in the 30s and 40s, do you think they'd have electricity in half of these areas or phone service? No, we would have parts of this country that are like 100 years ago because there'd be no need for development. Leave them alone. But we passed laws that said, you know what, if we're going to move forward, we're all going to move forward together. And that's the difference in all of this. I'm not a privatization fan. I don't think we should be using public money to enrich private corporations. You know, I'm a free market guy. I'm a capitalist in the true sense. Corporations don't need our tax dollars. They don't need it. They don't need us insuring their investments. If you truly believe in the free market capitalist system, why would you ask the government for anything? Yet you look at all the people lined up at the government trough, all the big businesses who are first in line. And who are we talking about cutting in this whole debt thing? You and me. Oh, boy. And one of the people doing that is our friend Daryl Metcalf, who affectionately we call Mad Cow. And there was a great article written about him by Daniel DeVere. And we've got a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. When we come back, we're going to talk with Daniel DeVere about Daryl Metcalf and the agenda that is moving forward and the attacks that are coming. And really, who is the man known as Mad Cow? We're right back after this.
Smart policy and sound investment matters.
The Rick Smith Show. Message is brought to you by SEIU Local 668.
My name is Lewis. I help senior citizens get the services they need. I work for you, the taxpayers, in the Area Agency on Aging. Our senior population is growing. Their incomes are shrinking. Their need for government services is increasing, all at the same time. Funding for these services is not keeping pace, which means long waiting lists, huge caseloads, and more seniors at risk. We all know that these are tough economic times, but who wants to see our senior citizens suffer? They did their part. They worked hard and paid their taxes. Now it's our turn to make sure they get the services they need. Please contact your state legislators today and demand that they respect our senior citizens and vote to increase funding for programs that protect them.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org. and join our human services campaign.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
I'm David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280, or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Exposing GOP hypocrisy. The Rick Smith Show.
Seems to be the cry of the radical right. They see the opportunity. They are seizing the moment to enact all of the policies, go after all of the targets that they've been whispering to each other in their little cloakrooms at their think tanks and their secret societies and all of their little secret handshake clubs. Now they think they got it. And I look at Mad Cow. Representative Daryl Metcalf. He is now got his no rights at work agenda, pushing the voter ID bill. Boy, he can't be. There's probably not a happier guy on the planet. Although I can't imagine that he's very happy about the article that was written about him. Right Makes Might, written by Daniel DeVere. He's a reporter at the Philadelphia City Paper, also a contributing writer at Salon.com. Daniel, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I look at this piece you wrote, and I don't think anybody's surprised at the level of paranoia and insanity that is our friend the representative.
Well, I've just been following Representative Metcalf over the years and just seeing him pop up in article after article about moves against gay rights, against Muslims, against workers' rights, gun nut stuff just across the board, and it occurred to me that I should try to figure out a little more about him and put some of the pieces together and see who this right-wing state representative who's an increasingly influential voice in Harrisburg, who he is.
Right. You know, for the longest time, here in Pennsylvania anyway, whatever the radical right-wing agenda was, he was the one carrying the water. And the rest of the party, I think, kind of shunned him. But 2010 brought a number of people who were probably as radical as he is, if not more so, I'd argue.
Yeah, I mean, the 2010 elections in state legislatures nationwide and in Pennsylvania brought in a huge crop of right-wing freshmen. So, you know, Daryl Metcalf perhaps used to be this gadfly on the right wing of the party, but increasingly the Republican Party, moving to the right, you know, has him at its center.
Yeah, and that scares me. I got to be honest. When Daryl Metcalf is considered the center of the Republican Party, that scares me to no end, because I always viewed him as that radical, and now he doesn't look quite as radical.
Yeah, I mean, his legislation, the Castle Doctrine, which he supported along with a number of other Republicans, was signed by Corbett, this voter ID bill, which will require voters to show government-issued ID at the polls, which Republicans would have you think that it's a coincidence that will also likely depress turnout amongst those far less likely to have government-issued ID, like black people, poor people, you know, people who tend not to vote for the Republican Party. That just passed the House. So, yeah, I'm not sure on what issues really Daryl Metcalf is out of the Republican mainstream on anymore.
And that's what I'm trying to explain to my Republican friends. Look, you know, I've got some problems with people who consider themselves Republicans at this moment in history because of just how radical their agenda has become. It's no longer about jobs. It's no longer about keeping this latest debt thing, man. If you can look at this party and say this isn't the party of scorched earth, I don't know what to call them.
Sure. I mean, the majority of my sources for this article were Republicans. You know, someone on the left might disagree with a moderate Republican, but they're at least someone that you can sit down and have a political conversation with, you know, that's not citing the Bible to back up the majority of their claims necessarily. So, people like Karen Beyer, a former state representative from the Lehigh Valley, who lost in the primary last spring to a 20-something Tea Party challenger. Those sorts of people, you know, the sorts of moderate Republicans that would have reached across the aisle to, along with Democrats, pass the tax on the natural gas industry, for example, you know, they're an endangered species. In Pennsylvania, and again, across the nation, there are now more Republicans in state legislatures nationwide than at any time since the Great Depression. So this is really, you know, all the attention's been on, understandably to some degree, on all the insanity taking place in D.C. and Republicans holding, you know, our economy hostage to huge cuts in social spending and whatnot. Understandably, there's been a lot of attention paid to that, but there's so much action taking place at the states where Republicans control legislatures and in many states have control legislatures and the governorship. So really do have a blank check to move this really far-right agenda.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because you look at states like Wisconsin and Ohio and Michigan and Florida, and the list goes on, and the agenda that they've laid out, it almost seems like, and maybe you've got some information that it is, but it seems like someone wrote the grand plan, and they passed it around, and everyone cut and paste their version of it. And, you know, I look at Metcalf's, you know, no rights at work agenda. It's the same basic agenda that they had in Ohio and in Wisconsin to steal workers' rights away to organize. You look at the voter ID thing especially. I can't imagine. I'm sure there was one copy of that they just photocopied off and handed around.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, there was. You have Metcalf and many other Republicans in Pennsylvania, and one or two conservative Democrats, are members of the American Legislative Exchange Council, which has come in for a lot of scrutiny recently after the Center for Media and Democracy acquired hundreds of their pieces of secret model legislation. What they do, it's an organization of conservative state legislatures, over 1,500 around the country, who sit behind closed doors with representatives of big business who pay to be at the table to draft model legislation that often stands to benefit the corporation sitting at that table, restricting workers' rights, privatizing businesses. Like you said, the voter ID bill, Arizona-style anti-immigrant legislation that requires local law enforcement to enforce federal immigration laws, gun rights stuff. I mean, all of these issues, state legislators and representatives of major corporations are drafting this model legislation behind closed doors and then pushing state legislators to adopt it. This has led Common Cause, the good government group, to write to the IRS and ask that ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, that their nonprofit status be revoked because they claim they do no lobbying, when the real question appears to be, what do they do that is not lobbying?
Well, they write the law. They're actually legislating. They're not lobbying. They're actually yeah. doing these guys' work.
They really cut out the middleman.
And why don't we just cut out the Metcalfs of the world and say, fine, here's the agenda. Because I look at this and I go, you know, it's basically plagiarizing from this group. And I'm told from our friends at Keystone Progress that they're coming out with a report tomorrow going to lay some of this out. I guess they've got 23 legislators who are basically doing this, cut and pasting right from this ALEC group and passing law based on what somebody else has done for them.
Yeah, I mean, that I look forward to reading Keystone's report because, you know, this is people are just starting to, you know, roll up their sleeves and get their hands dirty, actually, state by state, looking at this legislation, figuring out what appears to be coming from ALEC. Sometimes it's word for word, sometimes it's not, but you do see, you know.
You see the fingerprints all over it.
Yeah, and you see these guys moving in lockstep. And, you know, again, you know, the right is much better at being, you know, kind of on message and on script than the left, whether it's kind of, you know, the message or meme of the day on Fox News or in this case, whether it's, you know, this corporate-drafted legislation.
Yeah, it comes with the dollar signs behind it. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Daniel Denver. He's a reporter at the Philadelphia City Paper, also a contributing writer over at Salon.com. His piece, Right Makes Might, there's a link at our site at TheRickSmithShow.com. Getting back to Daryl Metcalf for a minute, you'd written a piece, a comment from the Democratic Butler County Commissioner, who said, quote, that Metcalf would not allow anyone to clean his office after he's left because he has, quote-unquote, secret documents. I look at that and I go, does this guy really live in that kind of paranoid world?
Well, first, my last name is pronounced Denver, quick aside. But, yes, I think he does, and you see his bullying, his legislative bullying in Harrisburg of gays, of workers, you know, of people who you know, the right has made a target of their policies. And then you go back and talk to people in Butler County, the majority of whom are Republicans, and they say that he's just as much of a bully there. He runs candidates against local township supervisors who cross him in one way or another. He engineered a takeover of the Butler County Republican Party and tried to have moderate members expelled. You know, he's not popular at home, including with Republicans.
Yeah, when I first met him, and, you know, I remember the first time that I met the guy, I walked away with the sense that, you know, he was an LMV when he was a kid. Now he's got a little power. An LMV is a lunch money victim. And that, you know, now that he's got a little bit of power, he's now the bully in the room pulling some of this stuff. And the piece that you've written kind of lays that out for me.
Yeah, well, I would have loved to find out more about Daryl Metcalf, the man, and his history. No one could tell me anything, and I would need a few more months of work to really dig in and see what's going on there. He is completely unknown in Butler County prior to running for office in 1998. All people know is that he served in the military, he attended Kansas State University, he's from upstate New York. That's really the extent of his known biography.
So how did he get elected if they don't know who he is?
Well, most of the people that I talked to in Butler, I mean, first of all, they kind of sighed when they heard that when they picked up the phone and heard that I was writing an article about Daryl Metcalf. They say that, you know, when he gets on TV in Harrisburg and it comes up, you know, below his name, you know, Republican Cranberry Township or Republican Butler County, that they sort of, you know, cringe in embarrassment because they don't really appreciate their their hometown being known for this sort of extremism. But the theory that numerous Republicans and Democrats in Butler County offered was, this is this very fast-growing exurb of Pittsburgh, and a lot of the commuters there, the kind of wealthy, business people who are commuting from Pittsburgh and living in Butler County, they're new, they're not really engaging in local politics. They're probably not exactly progressive, but they're not, you know, Bible-thumping gun nuts either. So they're not engaged, and what Daryl has done is built some sort of political organization, according to my sources there, based in evangelical and fundamentalist churches. But, again, that merits further investigation, exactly how he built his support there.
Interesting. Well, it's a good piece. I suggest folks go take a look at it. We've got a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Daniel Denver, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Again, the piece is Right Makes Might. Meet Daryl Metcalf, the gun-toting, gay-bashing, tea-partying state rep who's taking over Harrisburg. Again, we've got a link there at our site. Just click on Daniel Denver's name. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
But I do know that I need you. And if you fall for all the crap I spew, what a wonderful world this would be.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Just when you thought it was safe, those crazy Republicans are at it again. It's time for the Rick Smith Show's Conservative Alerts.
And right on that crazy train, Tea Party organizer and Republican candidate for the August 9th recall election woman named Kim Simic. Evidently, wrote something on the Tea Party Action Network about our schools kind of being like Nazi Germany. She wrote, I am done raising my kids, but if I was a young parent today, I would take my kids out of the public school system today. At what point will we stop talking about the comparisons to what is occurring today and what actually happened by the regime of the Nazis of the past? This idea, this hatred of public education. And this is a right-wing position, a very right-wing position. Anything that we the people do, anything that we do together, like educating children, somehow, no good. Government shouldn't be educating children. And it's this divorce of government and people. I keep saying, look, at the end of the day, the government that we have in Washington, what's going on there is a reflection of us. It's a reflection of the battles that we have every day with people every day on positions. We have two very different competing worldviews. There's the one that brought us together, created a very strong, burgeoning middle class that says, you know what? We need government intervention to help invest in roads and bridges and education and hospitals and all of that stuff, and to make sure that there's a cop on the corner to make sure that the economy is being distributed in a fairer way.
And you do that through labor unions. You do that through people having the right to collective bargaining. There's that worldview. And then there's the right-wing worldview where government is there to enforce the rules of the ruling class. The very wealthy have an arm to keep the rabble in their place. You know, John Adams used to call the people the rabble. You know, the rabble. You know, those people. You know, at the end of the day, we, the rabble, we're the ones who run this country. If you buy into the frame that this is our country, quickly it's being stolen from us. It's being bought right out from under our feet, especially when you look at what's going on here. You can't even impose a modest tax on people stealing a resource right out from under us. You know, we went to war. We went to war with Iraq over the exact same thing that we're doing in Pennsylvania, which is sideways drilling and stealing the resource out from under our feet. Somehow we had to go and protect the Kuwaitis from their getting their oil stolen, yet we, not so much. It's kind of dumb, don't you think, Jake? I mean, really.
I don't know if many Americans remember that story going back to 91, the invasion. There was a lot of evidence that the Kuwaitis were doing. In fact, I believe our government had been investigating it. And there were some parts of the government that actually agreed with Saddam Hussein. And then all of a sudden, politics clicked over. And before you know it, we're invading Kuwait. We're invading Iraq because they invaded Kuwait because we had a mutual defense pact with Kuwait, who, by the way, at that time, I think was the world's second biggest producer of oil. So it's a matter of oil, but actually, were they doing it? There's some evidence they were actually stealing Iraqi oil.
Well, no, they were. I mean, there's not just some evidence, they were. And if you buy into some of the, you know, there's some theories out there. The name April Glaspie pops into my head. She was the envoy there who, you know, for all intent and purposes, people believe gave Hussein the okay to go into Kuwait. She was the spokesperson for the U.S. and basically said, you know, border disputes are not our thing, which was kind of the green light. And then a couple days later, boom, there's a whole big to-do. Not many people even remember that one of the Kuwaiti ambassadors' daughter testified in Congress, perjured herself in Congress, that she was a candy striper and she saw the Iraqi soldiers come into the Kuwaiti hospitals and throw babies out of incubators and bayonet them on the floor. You remember that? It was all over the place.
I do remember that.
She was never in the country. She was the daughter of an ambassador.
So it was actually a lie.
It's called perjury.
Well, I guess, was there any evidence that they actually did that?
No, there was no actual evidence that they did it, but this girl, a big part of the emotional response that came out of the American people, and I remember it like it was yesterday, was this girl tearfully testifying, and me even buying it, going, wow, that's horrible. Well, you know, what a bunch of scumbags. Go, you know, do what you got to do, I guess. Turns out it was all fabricated. It was a PR stunt.
But at least that time, if you remember, Rick, I remember, I believe there were 32 or 33 nations that went in there with us. That's the big difference between that and 2003 invasion.
Yep. Well, yeah, it's true. But I didn't want to get off on a whole thing here. But, you know, at the end of the day, yeah, we went, fought a war over it. We don't want to tax here. You look at the story, one hand giveth, one hand taketh away. One hand in this whole debt deal boosted Pell Grants. The other hand is forcing graduate students to pay interest on loans that they get from day one. Day one. So what will we save, quote unquote, by gutting the graduate student loan program? They claim we're going to save $26.3 billion over the next decade. And you read through the portion of this, and I'm going to read it, so bear with me here. This is actually what's in the legislation, I guess. Eliminate the subsidized loan program for graduate students. Beginning July 1, 2012, the bill would eliminate the interest subsidy on subsidized student loans for almost all graduate students while a borrower is in school. In the post-school grace period and during any authorized deferment period. So basically, while you're in school and while if you have to defer, interest is growing and you're paying. It goes on to say the current annual and cumulative loan limit for unsubsidized loans would be adjusted to permit students to borrow additional funds in the unsubsidized loan program. What does that mean? That means we're switching. We're switching from government-subsidized loans. Understand this is important because this is undoing everything that Obama did with the loan programs and getting it out of the hands of the privateers, out of the hands of the profiteers. Understand, this is it. They have now figured out a way around that. We're going back to for-profit banking, getting into education because it's profitable. They said, you know, we're going to adjust to permit students to borrow additional funds in the unsubsidized loan program. It goes on to say the CBO projects that over the 2012 to 2021 period, that provision would shift approximately $125 billion in loan volume from the subsidized to the unsubsidized loan program because borrowers would be responsible for the interest accrued on these loans while in school. CBO estimates that the provision would reduce direct spending by $8.2 billion over that period and $18.1 billion over the 2012 to 21 period. So, again, what we're doing, we're shifting the responsibility onto the backs of those who can least afford it. I question this. This is dumb to me. This is telling kids that, you know, as a nation, we don't value education and that, you know, we're going to balance our budgets on the backs of those who can least afford it. We've already got a system in this country that heaps massive loans on the backs of our students. This makes it worse. And you look at what you brought up earlier. The fact of the matter is we're spending about $300 million a day in Afghanistan. So in about 3 months, we spend about $27 billion. So basically what we're doing to this generation of people who are going to take care of us in the future is we're stealing from them about $26.3 billion so we can give Afghanistan $27 billion over the next 3 months. Priorities, folks. And you want to talk about redistribution of wealth? This is a massive redistribution of wealth from the working people and the students of this country to the military-industrial complex who has completely taken over. When are we going to realize that making big rocks smaller, not the answer? Yet we're more than willing, happy to do it, happy to take away opportunity from the next generation. It's nuts as far as I'm concerned. And you know, you go back to the thing in Wisconsin. These people are likening education to the Nazis. It fits their MO. Anything they can do to destroy opportunity.
Well, you know, the right wing and the ticky tank here in Harrisburg, whenever they talk about public schools, they talk about government schools. It conjures up, and it's a shame, but it conjures up images of totalitarian governments, you know, having control of their children and teaching them exactly only what the government wants them to know. Unfortunately, that's totally inaccurate. What they like to do is exactly what you said. They like to privatize it. That's their answer to everything.
And profitize it. So we're seeing another massive shift. And, you know, I guess, you know, the lobbyists of the world, they're doing their jobs. They are doing an outstanding job of shifting this. And this is why I love it. I wish some of the Tea Twizzlers would call. I never get a Tea Party person to call. Probably because they're wrong. But, you know, here again, one of those things. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Wisconsin Representative Brett Halsey about the right-wing attacks that are going on in Wisconsin. And, again, you look at what just happened. Just was broken that Politico found one of the Koch brother front groups, the Americans for Prosperity, sent out some bizarre ballots. Election fraud? Voter fraud? I would argue yes. We're right back with Representative Brett Halsey.
Show. Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
The Pew Research Center released a study last week that shows a staggering racial wealth gap. According to the study, in 2009, the median wealth of white households was 20 times that of black households and 18 times that of Hispanic households. According to Pew, the lopsided ratios are the largest since the government first began releasing such data. It shows that the recession and housing bubble hit minorities much harder than white households. Hispanics saw their median wealth fall by 66% since 2006, and black households saw a decrease of 53%. In comparison, the decline of median wealth for white households was barely a blip, declining 16%. The typical white household held $113,000 in assets in 2009, while Hispanic and black households both held less than $7,000 in assets. The average net worth of Hispanic households was $18,000 in 2005. The union has filed charges against Hyatt for turning heat lamps on picketers, as Unite Here Chicago Hyatt hotel strike continues. Doug Cunningham takes a look at the issues behind this strike.
If you're in solidarity with workers and you're traveling to Chicago, striking Hyatt workers ask that you don't stay at Hyatt hotels in the Windy City.
Support the boycott, not to come inside these hotels if they're not going to treat the workers what their chests do. Our workers are standing up for what's right.
Will Spain is door captain at one of the Chicago Hyatts. Spain says the main issue is job security.
The Hyatt has added temp workers to work alongside our folks to try to take away their jobs. We need the support from the community. We need support from the religious leaders.
Before striking, the workers bargained with Hyatt for 20 months. Unite Here says Hyatt is owned by billionaires, yet wants to outsource work and impose dangerous conditions on housekeepers. The American Journal of Industrial Medicine found in 2010 that Hyatt housekeepers had the highest injury rates of the five major hotel companies.
They do a 16-room quota a day, and they're beaten down. They can't go home and feed their families at the end of the day.
The emergency financial manager for Detroit Public Schools will unilaterally slash worker pay by 10%. Roy Roberts made the announcement on Friday, adding that employees will also be responsible for a 20% increase in health care costs. Roberts can make such decisions due to new powers emergency financial managers received under legislation passed in Michigan earlier this year. The pay cut starts on August 23rd, and the benefits hike starts on September 1st. Unions representing teachers and faculty are planning to challenge the decision in court.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
We found a better way of making it seem clean. We built an electronic voting machine, and then we sold these suckers nationwide. But we're the only ones who know what's on the inside. You push the buttons and our voting machine keeps track. We made it so it's very easy to hack. Call for a recount, it will probably fail. But our machines don't leave no paper trail.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. It's been reported by Politico that the euphemistically named Koch brother front group, Americans for Prosperity, has mailed out absentee ballots to Democrats in at least two of the Wisconsin State Senate recall districts with instructions to return the paperwork, well, after the election date, of course. The mailers obtained by one of the reporters instructs reliable Democratic voters to return the ballot for the August 9th election to the city clerk by before August 11th. And again, you know, simple error? No, I don't think so. In fact, I said this was going to happen. You knew it was going to happen. But Wisconsin's been a very interesting place because a lot of the things that are going on there coming here, which is why we've paid such close attention. That's why I've asked Wisconsin Representative Brett Halsey to come talk to us about what's going on and how we fight this back here. Representative Halsey, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, sure. Glad to talk to you. And it's been a long time since you're broadcasting from my office.
Yeah, and you know what? We had a great time, and I appreciate your hospitality and your willingness to give us the opportunity to beam that back here. So many people were, you know, We're thrilled to have the opportunity to hear what's going on, because what you guys did in Wisconsin at that point, we're going to have to start ramping up here to start doing, because the real ugliness is about ready to start here.
Yeah, and this is the Koch brothers' corporate agenda that they're spreading nationwide. You know, it's written, you know, by corporate lawyers in D.C. and just exporting it to Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and everywhere. So,
you know, I look at this, you know, and, you know, hey, once you guys passed the voter ID thing and the recalls were starting, I predicted a whole bunch of stuff that any idiot with a little bit of historical knowledge could have easily predicted. And obviously enough, they've all come true, like this story with the Koch brothers sending out this thing with inaccurate information to Democratic voters.
Right, right. It's like, you know, you don't have to be Nostradamus to tell what kind of a blizzard's heading our way. So.
Yeah, I look at this voter ID thing, and, you know, again, you know, they made it out to be, oh, well, you just have to show a driver's license because we got to cut down on voter fraud. How many cases of fraud with this voter ID bill that you guys passed and we're talking about passing, how many cases do you think that stops? That's going
to
stop.
They were able to identify 3 or 4 cases. And the ironic thing is that none of the voter suppression methods they put in their bill actually address the problems. I mean, most of the problems had to do with clerks needing more staff, more support, actually, you know, investing tax dollars in better equipment and people to oversee the tax roll. So,
you know, we can't do that. We can't spend taxpayer dollars on helping people vote.
Heaven forbid, yeah, heaven forbid.
We just need to make it harder for them to vote. This way they'll stay home and we won't have as many to count.
Right, and that's what they're doing. But I think people are sort of catching on, and in the primary, in the fake, when they ran fake Democrats against our Democrats, people were just really outraged by the way the Republicans and the corporations were treating them. And I don't think they're taking it very well. So.
Nor should they. And I look at the fact that, you know, one of the first things I guess you guys are working on, and I don't know if it's happened yet, but with the in conjunction with this voter ID law that you guys have rammed through, they're closing some of the places where you can get the voter license, and in some cases, not telling people that they're free.
Yeah, many of the counties that needed the voter ID in the first place, in rural areas, you know, the DMV was only open a day or two a week, and they're shutting many of these down so that, and we think we're going to have a good constitutional case about taking away people's rights, you know, basically trying to disenfranchise, taking away the votes of senior citizens and families and others.
I can't imagine that the citizens of Wisconsin, and when we were there, we met some of the greatest people I've ever met, some of the most hospitable, some of the nicest people that I've ever met. And I can't imagine that they would take some of the stories that we're hearing coming out, like, for instance, I guess on Saturday in La Crosse, they had a fire at the We Are Wisconsin political hall, one of the offices we were using, and they're saying we don't really know what the fire is. Who knows what it could be?
Yeah, there's all kinds of suspicious stuff going on. But, you know, Rice Priebus, the head of the Republican Party, says the Republican Party's all in, which means they have their dirty tricks machine, you know, the G. Gordon Liddy types, that which are always sort of present in the Republican Party. I was at a Tea Party Michigan militia meeting on Saturday, and you had the Republican Party, the Tea Partiers, and the militia types meeting all at the same time, and it was a pretty crazy 12 people, I tell you.
Well, it's like, you know, in D.C. they had their big rally, and the handful showed up. But again, you know, what I'm hoping, and as I'm hoping that on August 9th, and that's the official date, that the folks in Wisconsin come out and push back against this kind of insanity, which I'm hoping people here in Pennsylvania do, because we've got some craziness coming up.
Yeah, and as we saw with, you know, the whole debt ceiling deal, the Republicans are willing to shut down federal government to unfund, you know, food safety, the FAA, and basically government over their extreme right-wing agenda. You know, they're willing to kill the, you know, the the whole stock market and our job recovery just to promote their extreme agenda. And, you know, unfortunately, they got too much of what they wanted. So.
Yeah. See, now, in talking about that, you know, because this whole debt thing to me has been just a major distraction, in my opinion, away from the fact that the Republicans who promised us on the national level in November jobs, 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 don't have an idea or a clue how to make that reality. I mean, I look at there and I talked about their grand pledge for America, and yet they haven't done any of what they said they were going to do, create jobs, restore trust, any of that stuff. And again, what it's about to me is they have no ideas and no vision.
Well, and it's what I found here in Wisconsin, I'm a small business person. I worked on more of $1 billion worth of clean energy projects here in Wisconsin across the country. And these guys wouldn't know a job if they fell out of a truck and hit one. They created one bill that would allow a tax break of $300 for every new job created, which wouldn't even cover the cost of the accountant to file the paperwork to get the money.
Right.
You know, and again, they just, and when you look at these guys, they're actually either professional politicians or corporate hacks that have never created jobs. And I've created, you know, about 1,000 jobs. And it drives me crazy that they stand up and talk this phony jobs agenda when, you know, again, many of them's nose is pretty deep in the corporate or the government trough.
So. Absolutely.
Like Michelle Bachmann taking all the farm payments, you know, and the handouts while being against handouts.
And getting a loan from the from Freddie and Fannie while bashing them ad nauseum. You know, but I look at this, and I would think that since Scott Walker has carried the water for the Koch brothers and has carried the water for the right-wing agenda, that they would be bringing jobs. I mean, they've stolen the right of collective bargaining away from public sector workers, you know, away from teachers. It would be the perfect place to invest for if you have a right-wing ideology, I think, right now, because you'd want to make that look as good as possible.
Right, and the corporate CEOs, of course, are saying that now they want to do business here in Wisconsin because they bought and paid for, you know, Walker and the government. But what we're seeing is actually Wisconsin is one of the leading manufacturing states in the nation. And, you know, manufacturing requires smart, trained people. Governor Walker cut our job training tech school budget by 30%. So as kids go back to school next month, they're not going to have many of the high-tech training classes they need to do those jobs, well-paying jobs of the 21st century.
Well, what we can do then is we can bring them in on HB1 visas and from overseas, and we won't have to worry about it. The job creators will have their people.
Yeah, except, you know, they're against immigration, too. So.
Well, no, not the HB1s. They're very some people I've talked to are very happy with those because those just bring in the best people. We want to have those.
Yeah, well, we'll see how that works. But again, University of Wisconsin, we like to train our folks to be the employees of the future, not the folks from other places. So, you know, we do have a large international community here too.
You know, as I look at this, and you know, here in Pennsylvania, I'm not sure, and I could probably guarantee that they're attacking unemployed folks as well. But here in Pennsylvania, they're going after the unemployed who can't find jobs because, duh, they're not here. I'm sure it's going the same thing going on there in Wisconsin.
Yeah, in fact, today the state Senate finally, you know, after we proposed it months ago, passed the extension in jobless benefits. I think we sent a letter calling for extension of benefits last January or even December. They finally got around to that, but they said people have to wait a week before they can sign up. And as you know, anybody who's ever been laid off knows that week can be the difference between keeping your house, feeding your kids, and not. And but again, these guys have never had real jobs, so they wouldn't know that. But it's like, and it ultimate crass thing they just found out. We found out they're paying a Republican lobbyist lawyer firm $300 an hour to do the whole unfair, despair, take our rights bill. But yet they don't want to pay an unemployed family $350 a week to get back on their feet. That's just kicking unemployed workers while they're down.
Well, that is the agenda, and it has been what we've seen since at least last November. Let me ask you, in moving forward to August 9th, what are you hoping for? I mean, I know you're hoping for a sweep, but realistically, what are you hoping for?
Well, it would be nice that there's six seats up on the 9th, and then there's two more seats up 2 weeks later. I think we're going to have a pretty good day. So far, the election we had, they had Dave Hansen won re-election 2-1. He was the Democrat running the Green Bay area. But I'm feeling it's pretty good. I mean, we're just seeing millions of dollars of corporate attack ads coming in. But I think people are just turned off on that. I'm hoping we could pick up another 3, but I think we may do better. It's hard to say, Rick. You know, it's like predicting who's going to win, the Steelers or the Packers.
Right. Now I hear you. But, you know, the reason I ask is, you know, what I'm hoping comes out of this is more than just we need to get to these recalls and then everybody says, oh, we did it, we won, we go home. I'm hoping there's a sustained movement of people, you know, because 2012 is coming around the corner, and as bad as I think the president did in this whole debt thing, having a President Rick Perry to me is much, much scarier than what we've seen.
Yeah, Rick Perry will sort of make you look like the George Bush good old days, you know. But I think, you know, the next step, we get back to the Senate, then we recall Governor Walker, then the Assembly, we need to win back the Assembly, and then we got to govern to clean up all this mess. So
it's going to be a lot of digging, I guarantee.
Yeah, there's a lot of, it's like, you know, the problem with cleaning up after elephants is you got to have a pretty big scoop shovel for that.
And I know you guys are up to it, and I wish you the best, and I look forward to talking to you again. It's always great to reconnect and find out what's going on in your neck of the woods.
Okay, keep the faith, man, and remember us, and we'll keep an eye on Pennsylvania, too.
I appreciate it. Representative Halsey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Rick.
We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
As narrators used to say in Western movies, meanwhile, back at the ranch, our policymakers in Washington have totally lost sight of what's happening at the ranch. Both John Boehner's GOP-controlled House and Barack Obama's White House are riveted on slashing trillions of dollars from the federal budget, as though that's America's most important need. Bovine excrement. If they had lift their vision to the countryside, even they could figure out that our great economic urgency is for the creation of good middle-class jobs to get America moving again, moving upward and moving together. Today, we are a dangerously disunited society. Elite CEOs and big investors are grabbing all the gains, leaving the vast majority mired in recession and facing falling incomes. Since the recession technically ended 18 months ago, corporate profits have zoomed, sopping up an unprecedented 88% of America's economic growth. Meanwhile, only 1% of the growth that we all help produce has gone to wages and salaries, which is the source of income for about 90% of us. Yet those same CEOs say they won't invest in new jobs or raise wages until consumers start buying again. That's like saying the beatings will continue until morale improves. Hello, the consumers CEOs are waiting on are the workers whose jobs and wages the CEOs won't increase. This is Jim Hightower saying, you see, despite the GOP's ideological claptrap about corporate executives being job creators, it is ordinary Americans who actually create jobs by spending from their paychecks. This is why our obtuse policymakers need to quit pampering the rich and start launching a national FDR-style jobs program that'll immediately increase paychecks, perk up consumer spending, and generate grassroots economic growth.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Yeah! quite sure what he did before, but he wants to do it again. The Herman Cain train. Sad thing is our friend Scott Kies at Think Progress evidently thrown off the Herman Cain train. Evidently, he's been told he's not allowed to ask Herman any more questions. And I guess that's only fair. Because, you know, Scott kind of derailed his entire campaign for, you know, rational people. Which brings me to this past weekend's Western Conservative Summit, which was held in Denver, Colorado. And you had, a handful of the Republican hopefuls that showed up, including our boy Herman Cain, who surprisingly has taken the straw poll in this Western Conservative Summit. He got 48% of the votes cast. 48%. He got 246 of the 508 votes. Rick Perry, the governor of Texas, he came up next with 67. And then you had Santorum and Romney and Bachman and the rest of them. They got, I think, 10 votes each. So, man, would that not be the slug royale? Obama and Herman Cain, and what I kind of wonder about, because we keep seeing the radical right, you know, and look, you know, I'm not calling them racist, but they tend to have racist overtones. And I look at this Colorado representative, Doug Lamborn, who was appearing on some radio show last Friday, and well, I think it's best just to play him in his own words. Cause, you know, again, it's one of those things where you go, really? Did you just say that? Here you go. Or maybe not. Do we have it?
They will hold the president responsible. Now, I don't want to even have to be associated with him. It's like touching a tar baby and you get it, you know, you're stuck and you're part of the problem now. And you can't get away. I don't want that to happen to us, but if it does or not, he'll still get, properly so, the blame, because his policies for 4 years will have failed the American people. Look at.
Am I the only one who thinks calling someone a tar baby is kind of the wrong thing to do?
It's not politically correct, to say the least.
Did I miss that? Here.
And I don't want to even have to be associated with him. It's like touching a tar baby and you get it, you know, you're stuck and you're part of the problem now.
You got it on you. You touched the tar baby and it rubbed off. I mean, really? This guy is in the U.S. House of Representatives. And my head almost exploded when I saw this. But then again, you know, you're talking about a representative from Colorado where Tom Tancredo came from. Which is why, again, I go back to Herman Cain, 48% of the vote. He almost got half of the Western conservatives to sign on with him. I mean, it's amazing. And the former Colorado Speaker of the House, Terrence Carroll, who is an African-American, he went after Lamborn for his marks. He said, quote, looking beyond the fact that the congressman, his entire comment is nonsensical, his use of the term tar baby is unfortunate because of the historical connotation of that term when it was used in conjunction with African Americans. He goes on to say, I certainly hope the congressman simply failed to carefully consider his word choice as opposed to making racially derogatory remarks towards the president. Personally, I think the guy knew it was a racially degrading comment, but that's just me. Now, the other part of this Western Conference, conservative summit, whatever it is, I watched on the weekend, and I watched Rick Perry. He scares me now more than ever. I mean, it was, he gave one of the most jingoistic speeches, you wrap up every right-wing talking point and then ooze it in grease and then deep fry it and then put all kinds of batter on top of it, deep fry it again, that's him.
A little chocolate, perhaps?
Oh, my God. It was just... And I go, this... You know, I went back... You ever saw the Omen movies?
Some of them.
Where Damien Thorne becomes president?
Mm-hmm.
Here he is. He just changed his name. This guy is...
The Antichrist.
Oh, and, you know, the thing that gets me is the Fort Worth Star-Telegraph, Telegram, they've pointed out that nearly half of the $102.8 million that Perry Rose raised from 2001 to 2010 came from 204 mega donors. These big, and again, who's he bought and paid for? 204 people. They contributed more than $100,000 apiece. And you go, wow. $102.8 million he raised in a 9-year span. Wow. Finally, Mitt Romney weighed in on the debate and says he can't support it.
Did he finally come out of his cave?
Yeah, he did. So, and again, it goes into the column of, does anybody really care? Because I think Romney's done. I don't think Romney's the guy.
He's got to be the dullest of all the candidates.
I don't think he's the guy.
I think he's
in the lead. He's playing defense. But I think at the end of the day, I'm scared of Rick Perry.
Did you notice Romney? Even when they show him in a coffee shop or a restaurant, and he's out shaking hands, he doesn't seem comfortable. It's like that's just not. He doesn't feel comfortable with those people.
Those are those people. Remember that.
Yes. I'm serious. It's like, you know, he's an aristocrat and these people are, you know, just common folk. And it's distinguishable. Well, he doesn't seem at ease.
Well, increasingly.
In other words, he's not a good campaigner. He's not a good campaigner.
Honestly, that's most of our politicos. They've just figured out how to fake it well. They can act like the common folk, just like anybody. I'll put on a pair of dirty jeans anytime.
I've known some. I'll tell you who was one of the best ever was Ed Rendell. Fantastic out in the street.
Yeah, he'd sit down and eat a cheesesteak with anyone.
You know, someone that I knew and I respected their opinion once told me that, you know, Ed Rendell could meet you for the first time and act like he knew you for 20 years.
Well, that's what they say about Clinton. And look what that
and that's an art.
It is an art.
That's an ability.
It's something I don't have.
I think they call charisma.
Well,
and that's something
they've got
that,
the art of BS.
I don't think Romney has that.
No.
Plain and simple.
I still don't think he's going to be the nominee, but that's why we play the game. But anyway, over the weekend, I was watching C-SPAN. And they had this woman on from one of the Tea Party groups. She's a co-founder. I forget what her name was. Basically, your soccer mom. She used to be an airline stewardess, but a big one. And they kept asking her questions, the interviewer. And it was one of these, you ask a tough question, she doesn't give you an answer, and you move on. As where I would have focused on the question that you asked that she didn't bother answer. So he asked her, he said, what about this? And she would throw out a talking point. What about this? She'd throw out a talking point, never answering his questions. And the one thing that she came to, he asked her, what about the balanced budget amendment that you seem to be so in love with? And she goes, I don't really know that much about it, but I know we need to get our spending under control. And I'm sitting there going, really? You're advocating something you don't know anything about? And that really, I got to be honest, kind of lines up the whole Tea Party movement for me. When your leader, when the person that's supposed to be the leader of this group, the co-founder, the president, the whatever, when they don't have an idea, when they don't really have a direction, that scares me. And it really is indicative of the entire Tea thing. I'm often amazed at how few. And even to this day, I still run into Tea Party people who say, hey, I'm a Tea Party person. Ask them, what does T stand for? They don't know. That's scary. But she kept going, she kept saying, it was this talking point over and over again. We got a spending problem. We got a spending problem. And, very nice talking points. We need a balanced budget amendment. I'm completely unable to explain it. And I'll tell you why I don't believe we can have a balanced budget amendment. You look at the reality during 9/11, you look at the collapse under George Bush, we would not have been able to respond to those crises with a balanced budget amendment. Wouldn't have happened. Because under that balanced idea, what would happen is money that was going to social programs, money that was going into defense or whatever would be shifted around, and you would have massive need. And that's the idea. The idea is to starve one group at the expense of another. And as you see on the state level, now, look, I'm the first one who will say live within your means. And if that means raising revenue, you got to raise revenue. I would like anybody. I don't want to pay taxes. But at the end of the day, I do want roads to drive to work on. I do want an education system that my kids are going to thrive and be educated in. I want to have policemen and firemen. I want to be able to make sure that, you know, no one robs my house, or when my house catches on fire, someone puts it out. There's a lot of things as a society that that we've decided we need and we want. So when Congress, and that's why this whole debt debate thing was bogus to me, all of these bills that they argue, all of this, these appropriations they make, they should have to pay for. And if that means going into Afghanistan, that means you have to raise taxes to pay for that. Don't you think? Instead of saying $300 million a day, we're going to put on a credit card to fight in Afghanistan while we're cutting student loans, I'm sorry, we should be asking people who are doing really well to chip in a little bit, just a little. You know, at the end of the day, you can't have guns and butter unless you're willing to pay for them. And that's what this whole thing is kind of weird for me about. And this whole balanced budget thing, this whole restrictive straitjacket that the Republicans want to impose scares me. And the fact that there are so many people who think, well, it's a good idea. Yeah, we should do that. So that we're incapable of dealing with our problems. And then the other thing that I found out about Rick Perry, they passed a pay-or-lose tort reform bill in Texas, which means good luck finding an attorney to take a lawsuit if you're injured through a consumer product, or you're injured on the job, or you're, good luck. You're on your own. And that's the direction they want this country to go, which is why it scares me to see a President Perry. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. Right back after.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
So now you see the light, hey, stand up for your rights. Come on, get up, stand up, stand up for your rights.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. So an angry Pennsylvania Representative Mike Doyle, closed-door session, I guess, this afternoon with Vice President Biden, reportedly said, we have negotiated with terrorists. This small group of terrorists have made it impossible to spend money. Interesting quote. It'll be interesting to see if he actually said it. Anyway, to help us get through what's going on here and hopefully put some dirt over this. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you very much.
I got to be honest right from the start. I'll be happy when this is behind us. But as Mitch McConnell said, this is the new normal, I guess. This is going to be something that's going to come up every time we go to have to raise the debt ceiling.
Yes, it is the new normal, and it certainly is for Mitch McConnell, who is the one person who's greatly strengthened by this. This is all part of his plan, his grand plan, to become Senate Majority Leader and to strengthen Obama just enough to prop him up, put him on the ropes, and knock him out.
I got to be honest with you. I look at this, and this is a bad deal for me, anyway. The way I look at it, with these automatic triggers, 2% across the board cuts, exactly what did we force the Republicans into? Anything?
No, not really. I mean, there's very little in here that Republicans don't like. The only thing they don't like is that the cuts aren't deep enough.
You mean you're going to cut 2%? That's all? You expect that to be the negative? I'm missing something here. Maybe Nancy Pelosi, when she said about the health care bill, we'll know more about it. We'll like it more when we find out what's in it. I got the feeling we're going to like this a whole lot less and the more we find out what's in it.
Yes, it's very interesting. The administration was going around today and some of yesterday trying to explain to lawmakers a little bit more of what's in it because they felt that Democrats didn't get it, that if it was explained to them better, that they'd understand it and they'd like it more.
Yeah, I mean, you could do this in very small words with pictures, and you're still not getting through to me because I'm not seeing the upside to this. I see job losses as far as the eye can see. When you're taking money out of an economy that's struggling, that's going to take us straight down back where we were.
Well, and certainly that's what some of the unions are saying. The president of the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, which is a huge union, the nation's main public workers union, said today that the compromise was economic malpractice, saying that at the least it will slow economic recovery and impose more joblessness, wage cuts, and hardship on America's working families.
You know, all across the board we're going to lose. Be it in the public sector, because as McEntee pointed out there, the reality is if you're taking money out of government, that means more layoffs, less services. That means more people are going to have to dig into their pocket to pay for the services that we, the people, used to provide for everybody. This is a bad deal. Even in defense, where, you know, it used to create jobs, you can say what you want about the wasteful spending. It'll be interesting to see the congressman duking it out on the floor for the pennies.
And they're going to be doing that. According to congressional sources, that's the way it's sort of set up, because the deal has not etched in stone firm Pentagon budget reduction targets. So that means there are going to be political fights every year because, as you know, many Republicans, especially in the House, oppose, you know, big military funding reductions. A lot of Democrats are open to fairly sizable cuts, as, by the way, are quite a few in the Pentagon. So it's going to be pretty tough stuff. We're going to see this again and again and again. We're just going to basically see fighting from now on about everything.
That's an interesting way of putting it. And, you know, fighting about everything. And
yeah.
And more petulance.
Yeah, it wasn't the most eloquent line I ever used, but it really says it.
It's straight to the heart, because, you know, you look at what's happened here. Our entire focus has been taken off what's really important, which is creating jobs, which is getting people back to work, investing in infrastructure, investing in education, healthcare, the things that we need to move forward. This does the absolute opposite of everything we need to be doing.
You know, Joe Biden, the vice president, when he went to the caucus with the Democrats today, he made the point that we'd like to be talking about jobs, but until we get this done, we can't go back to focusing on jobs. That's what he said.
Yeah, but how can you go back after you've already made this deal and said, okay, we're going to make all these cuts? There's no way, unless maybe I'm missing something. Is there a path backward?
Well, he seems to think there is.
Huh. And especially since you got no revenue enhancements. We're not seeing anybody taking away the push handouts. We're not seeing anyone closing the jet loopholes and all the thousands of other corporate special interest loopholes. Not seeing any of that.
No, that's not there specifically. But I think the hope is that with this committee of 12, this super committee, that's something that can come about. I actually think it's unlikely that it will come about with this super committee.
And even whatever does, I mean, the Republican, there's no incentive for the Republicans to go with it because they've already got 2% across the board cuts.
And that's correct.
Oh, man, we are, well, We're in trouble. Also, speaking of trouble, I guess the other hostage situation that nobody's talking about is the FAA reauthorization bill that did not happen. And now that the House is adjourned, not going to happen until after their little vacation. What's going on with that?
Well, this is hugely frustrating to people who are involved, who are saying, you know, can't you walk and chew gum at the same time? Couldn't you have dealt with this at the same time as the debt ceiling? In fact, it's so frustrating that the president of the Association of Flight Attendants, Veda Shook, said, why can't they multitask? I'm a flight attendant. When I go to work, I have to pay attention to what's happening in front of me and behind me, ensure the safety of passengers, all while pleasantly serving drinks. I would think a congressman could pass a bill to put people back to work while dealing with the debt ceiling. So she's furious. Transportation Secretary Rayla Hood is furious and saying members of Congress shouldn't even get on a plane to fly home for vacation without passing an FAA bill. And basically, what's likely to happen is that Eric Cantor, the House Majority Leader, says the lower chamber will leave without voting on an FAA funding bill. Well, they voted on one, but it's stalled in the Senate. Harry Reid says the upper chamber will pass a clean stopgap FAA bill, but the House would need to pass that bill, and of course they won't be in town to do so. So those 4,000 furloughed workers will continue to be furloughed for August.
Well, it's not just the 4,000 the 4,000 FAA workers. It's the 90 to 200,000 construction workers and all the other workers who are working on FAA authorized projects. You know, here in the state of Pennsylvania, 1,009 employees are off because the projects that they were working on at airports and across the country stopped because there's no more money for it.
That's right. No, it's extremely serious. I mean, everything is grinding to a halt because of this impasse, caused in large measure by a couple of things. There's a provision in the House version of a short-term extension that eliminates some subsidies for rural air service. And then the other one is the longer-term bills bogged down because of a House effort to undo rules on unionization of railroad and airline employees that would make it harder for them to vote to collectively bargain.
Yeah, it's all about, and that's what it's really about. It's not about the rural subsidies. It's about taking people's rights away to organize. And that's what it's about, plain and simple. But you look at this and you go, you know, how can they possibly leave having had this debt ceiling talk when you're adding to the debt by all these people, anywhere from 94 to 204,000 people going to be collecting unemployment next week?
I don't have an answer for you.
It's just nuts.
There isn't an answer.
Victoria Jones, I appreciate your time. Always great talking to you. And I got to be honest, I'll be happy when we're not talking about the debt ceiling.
I'm telling you, so will I.
Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And now to find out what's going on across the street, what do you got for us tonight, Jacob?
Thanks, Rick. First couple stories will deal with the big story of the day, the debt ceiling vote, the Pennsylvania caucus, both Republican and Democrat, all of them except one. That's the Pittsburgh Democrat Mike Doyle, voted yes for various reasons. The two senators, Senator Toomey, who at least publicly was up in the air and had been a vocal critic of our spending policies at the last minute, issued a press release about 6:45, and he decided to vote against it. Quote, "This deal does nothing to deal with the path of government's unsustainable deficit spending," short and to the point. Bob Casey, on the other hand, who had been vocal about his disappointment at Congress's failure to act on a debt ceiling, wasted no time putting a statement out in support of the up-to-the-wire compromise. Quote, "To compromise is perfect, and the process has brought the country to the brink of default is unconscionable. The country is running out of options to avoid further economic harm. I will vote to move this compromise forward to avoid default, cut government spending, and provide some economic certainty. This proposal does make significant cuts in government spending," unquote. Report coming out, it has deals with the economy. Sometimes we don't realize all of the ramifications of a bad economy. Report coming out from the AFL-CIO about the job crisis among young voters, young workers, excuse me. The jobless rate nearly doubled among young workers to a peak of about 19% the fourth quarter of 2009 and has remained high, averaging about 17.4% in the second quarter of this year, compared with 6.7% for older workers and 9.1% for all workers. At the same time, the proportion of workers 55 and older in the workplace has increased as the baby boom generation ages and older workers are delaying retirement, especially following huge drops in home values and investments during the recession. The problem isn't that older people are taking jobs from youth, according to Lawrence Michel, who's president of the Economic Policy Institute. According to him, what's keeping young people from getting jobs is not competition from other people, but a lousy economy that nobody seems to be doing anything about. Younger workers are trying to get foothold, and when there are no jobs being created, it's hard for them to get a foothold. More and more young workers are the victims of not only a bad economy, but jobs leaving the country, limited opportunity, and more older workers working longer out of economic necessity. That spells a bad situation for young workers, and it seems to be getting increasingly worse. Some positive news coming out of labor. Steel workers have ratified the paper industry master agreement. Members of the United Steelworkers, employed at 13 paper mills in 10 states, ratified a new four-year master economic agreement with Georgia-Pacific. The agreement establishes the basic economic terms for upcoming bargaining with other paper companies. The new master agreement provides for wage increases in each of the 4 years, locks in key features in health care, and improvement in pensions and 401k. So in today's economy, Rick, they got a nice increase in each of the 4 years, kept their health care, and got increases in pensions and 401k. I'd say that's a decent contract.
All righty, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap things up for the night. And you're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people on the talk.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
On December 28, 1970, President Richard Nixon signed the Occupational Safety and Health Act into law. Thanks to strong lobbying efforts by union leaders over many years, this safety bill of rights established for the first time a comprehensive national policy to protect workers' health and safety. Effective April 28, 1971, employers were required to provide a workplace free of known hazards that caused or were likely to cause serious physical injury or death. Prior to the passage of OSHA, work-related injuries and deaths were extremely high. The 1920s saw reports of 20,000 workers killed on the job and more than 2.5 million injured per year. That number remained until the 1960s when work-related deaths dropped to 14,000 per year, but injuries increased by 20%. Today, thanks to OSHA, protections on-the-job injuries have fallen 40% and on-the-job deaths have been reduced by 60% pre-OSHA. OSHA is considered the first piece of legislation allowing the government to inspect and hold employers accountable for dangerous and physically harmful working conditions. OSHA has three branches, an enforcement branch, a research branch, and a review branch. Since its passage, OSHA has allowed for greater visibility and oversight in conditions on the job, prioritizing efforts to prevent accidents, control health hazards, and ensure workers go home as safe and as healthy as when they arrived on the job. While OSHA is a step in the right direction, there is still considerable work to be done, and only through the eyes and voices of working people with the help of their unions will tomorrow be a safer day. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therichsmithshow.com.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Our friend Poe Trucker sent me an email over the weekend telling me, remember that story that you talked about the letter that was 53 years late? And they had no idea who it was or where it went. Well, Turns out they found the people. The woman, not very happy. The man evidently changed his name, converted to Islam. evidently the couple, they married. He graduated. They had four kids. They then divorced. Of course, he changed his name to Muhammad Sadek. And he, you know, what do you say? She not happy that they found the letter and have made a big deal about it. And I got to be honest. There's part of me that, you know, looks at that and goes, yeah, I don't know if I would want a letter that I've written, you know, 50 years ago, if I lived that long, to come out and be public knowledge, especially if you're talking about a, you know, a bitter divorce, I'm sure that they went through. And I'm assuming he's the one that left, since it's her that's making the visceral reaction. So interesting stuff. And, you know, it came with the note of, I'm not sure this is such a happy ending, but here it is. So it's kind of interesting. The guy, you know, converted to Muslim, to Islam. Not something you see every day. You know, something interesting happened in Pittsburgh today. The report came out of Pittsburgh today that over the weekend, evidently, this guy needed a ride, decided he was going to carjack somebody. He was working on the movie The Dark Knight Rises Friday in Pittsburgh. And, you know, he said, yeah, I got this job. I need to get to work or whatever. So he decides he's going to carjack somebody. 21-year-old decided that the car he would jack was an unmarked police car with a detective in it. Nice choice there. Nice choice there, Batman.
We can nominate him for the world's dumbest criminals. There is a show, you know.
I don't know, but you know, this is one of those moments where you go, I think you need to go to crime school. Which, in essence, he will be probably going to jail for this, and maybe he'll get smarter next time that the person you carjacked shouldn't be an unmarked police car.
Mm.
Brainiac. In Minnesota, they have this great festival, and it's the Midwest Tomato Fest. Where they have 10 tons of overripe tomatoes that they throw, crush, smash, and beat each other with. And I'm going, really? You got hundreds of people? They sold 2,000 tickets in advance and another 400 at the gates. You had 2,400 people throwing tomatoes at each other.
That's kind of like a snow fight that never ends, you know, snowball fight.
And I go, you know, is this the world we live in?
I don't know, Rick. I just for one, you know, maybe about an hour of lunacy, that would be kind of fun.
Well, knowing you would eat all the tomatoes.
No. Can I ask, and I missed that, where was that?
I was in Minnesota.
I believe, is it Italy? One of the countries in Europe, it's an annual thing, and that's a big thing over there.
It was in Afton, Minnesota.
Okay.
Reported according to the Minneapolis Star Tribune. But again, you know, 2,400 people throwing tomatoes at each other. If they would have, you see, now this is one of those moments where you could have taken those 10 tons of overripe tomatoes and those 2,400 people, and I know about 535 folks in Congress, but we could, you know, maybe start chucking those at. Because if you saw today, there was a group that were, you know, outside of the House, you know, chanting, you know, that Boehner, you know, should, well, not push through this bill. And they were arrested. 22 people arrested for having their voice heard and not shutting up so that they can conduct the people's business in the House. Here's a great story, another one from Minnesota. I don't know what it is about Minnesota. Usually it's Florida where I pick this stuff from, where the craziness happens. Tonight just happens to be Minnesota. So you get home. You got a two-year-old. The parents get home, and they realize Junior's not there. So they call the police. Someone stole Junior. Everybody's frantic. Everybody's all upset. The police are there. The news are there. Everybody comes. Big to-do. And it turns out that the parents left the child alone at the lake where they had been picnicking for the afternoon. And left him there. The boy was alone for about an hour. He was reunited with his family, and I question why. If you forgot the kid once, I can't imagine doing that.
You would think one of the parents would have noticed that that child wasn't with the other parent.
Yeah, I'm kind of hyper-paranoid about that stuff. I could see if you had like six of them or 10 or 30. I could see that. But when you've got one, don't you think that, you know, it's kind of like the keys to the car. You can't go anywhere without the keys to the car. You would think, you know, you check the car seat, everything's there. Well, no more Minnesota. Florida has come to the rescue. Police in St. Cloud, Florida say that these two teenagers dressed up as, ninjas or whatever they were going to be, walked into a McDonald's, and everybody called 911, figuring that these two masked teenagers were about to rob the McDonald's. The police came. There were all kinds of guns out. They had AK-47s and all kind of craziness, according to witnesses. And the police took the two teenagers out. They have been charged with a misdemeanor of wearing a mask in public, which I didn't realize was a misdemeanor. I just thought you didn't do it. But here again, they were released to their parents. But, you know, why would you, in the middle of summer, why would you have a mask over your face and long sleeve shirts and black ninja outfit?
Well, maybe it was a dare. Kids do crazy things. No, I know you know.
You see, you can't do that anymore. I mean, and this is the thing. This is
Didn't. How many kids realize it? You know,
this is where when I was a kid, half of what I would have done would have gotten me sent to Guantanamo Bay.
I mean, yes, knowing some of the things you did, that's probably true.
All right, fine. There you go.
We all do. The point is, Rick, as kids, we all think back and think, wow, what was I thinking?
And you weren't.
No, that's correct.
One of those things. Another story from Montana. And again, this is one of those moments where you go, how exactly did this happen? There's a quadriplegic who evidently is a skydiver. Now, understand, he's a quadriplegic. The arms and legs don't work. How exactly do you jump out of the plane? But evidently, this guy has made hundreds of jumps, or I guess 125 jumps. I would call them falls, since I don't see how he can jump. Well, I would assume he'd get pushed out. But in this case, our quadriplegic skydiver plunged 18,000 feet to his death because he was unable to manually deploy his parachute. And it was one of those things that I wondered. I mean, how exactly, if you're a quadriplegic, how exactly do you pull the ripcord?
Well, I would think one of two ways. Are there automatic? I don't know. Are there automatic parachutes that open at a certain height?
Not in this case.
Then you would think the only thing left would be his mouth.
Evidently missed the cord altogether, plunged 18,000 feet to his death. And, you know, I look at this and I go, I have two thoughts. One, who pushed him out and why? And two, you got to give the guy credit for living life. You know, I mean, if you're in that kind of a crummy situation, you know, why not? I mean, you know, if you know, you can figure out how to manipulate, you can figure out how to do it. God bless him. And, you know, he died doing something he liked. You know, I guess with a smile on your face, if that's how you go out, you know, God bless him. I wish him the best. Anyway, I want to thank our guests tonight on the program. Again, if you missed any portion of our program, you can download it at therickSmithShow.com. Or if you have a smartphone, you can download the Stitcher app. If you've got any questions, comments, something on your mind, something we've said ticks you off, I'd love to hear from you, rick@therickSmithShow.com. As always, have a great night. We look forward to seeing you back here tomorrow. Keep the faith.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide and flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming. Today you will pass me.
Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Hey there, fellow workers.